Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, there we go. I'm doing a quick type message out to Jen Clark, who's going to be joining us Thursday. We're trying for today, but we're having, you know, issues. We always have technical issues. And that's the Skype line. And it suddenly occurred to me that I've never used it to call out because I'm not sure how to do that, but I do have it set up to call in. And so the way we – and spent a long time doing that too. So, Jen, if you're listening in Australia, then in fact, let me just – I'm going to get her one more time. So just bear with me for a second here. In fact, Laura's going to join us here in a second as well from Canada. So we are truly international here at Action Radio. And so let me just go Blog Talk Radio. Gangun.com. Sorry to do this right now, but like I said, this show is a 24/7 process. It never really stops. We just kind of, you know, take a break when I'm on the air or not. Radio.com/citizenaction, CITIZEN, Citizen Action. And there we go. Okay, so anyway, so Laura, yeah, get the top on that. I mean, Jen, excuse me. So that's what's going on. So it's a little crazy right now. So like I said, I'm expecting Laura Avalese to call in here anytime now from Canada. Now, fortunately, Canada and the United States have phone arrangements where it's not that tough to do. But we have, you know, in other words, you can include in your regular service, you know, the fact you can call, I think I have Canada, Australia, and, excuse me, Canada and Mexico, because they're contiguous to the United States, and that's where most calls are going internationally anyway, to one of those two countries, because, you know, they're right next to us. So that's what's going on. So I'm trying to arrange that. And so it looks like Laura's here right now. So I'm going to have a little fun with Laura just because. I haven't done this for a while because I wasn't quite sure of the volume. So this is an experiment. This is I tried this way back when a little bit for guests, and I wasn't quite sure about it, but that may have been, it just wasn't working as well. So let me announce our guest of, well, actually it's our regular reporter of the day, Laura Avalese. You know, I may have to turn this up a little bit. I'll figure it out. Anyway, so Action Radio is reaching out, and we're reaching out to Canada, Australia, Israel, New Zealand, a bunch of other countries, hopefully Holland, Belgium, any place that's having a trucker convoy freedom rally. And the big question I'm asking, I'm asking everybody this, is freedom illegal? This is what it seems like is happening now. And are we engaged in a COVID war with our own governments? And so that's what I'm going to try and do. It sounds a little quiet, but I'll check that out in a little bit once I replay the podcast. We'll figure it out, and then we'll see what happens. Hey, good morning, Laura.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. Did you hear my background theme at all, or was it too quiet?
No, I did.
You did? Okay, I'll check it later. It sounded really quiet to me, but that's okay. I've got different volumes and microphones. I'm learning how to do the show. I've got my left hand on my keyboard. I get my right hand on the computer mouse. I'm talking, and I'm doing all this at the same time. ADHD is an essential quality for producing and doing your own show. I'm convinced of it.
That's funny. That's what I do every day.
Oh, yeah? So what's, if you haven't talked about your day job, I know you're an internationally known and celebrated author, which is just wonderful. But are you full-time writing or what you doing?
No, I'm a full-time realtor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. See, a lot of, you know, in fact, I have a friend of mine who's in real estate too, but around here, this area is booming so much and people are like, hey, isn't it great? You know, great time to, you know, be in real estate. Everything's booming. Well, the problem is the prices have doubled since I got here 5 years ago. And
the prices have just gone insane here. Yeah. I mean, I feel terrible for the first time home buyers, the young kids that are not going to be able to own a home. By the end of this year, they will not be able to own a home unless they come from money with mommy and daddy.
See, that's insane, you know, and I'll make a little confession here. I've always, you know, like I say, my job history has been rather creative, shall we say, because I haven't quite fit in anywhere. I mean, here I am at retirement age, finally, you know, getting a career that I actually like. So hopefully I'll be around to do this for another 20 or 30 years. But the point is, I've never owned a home. I've never been able to buy a new car. You know, yeah, I've had a great life and great adventures, you know, ups and downs and the whole bit. I've had things I wouldn't trade for anything, like being a flight instructor and some of the other crazy things I've been able to do. But raise a kid, it's been amazing. There's certain things that, I expected as a youngster growing up in the 60s. I mean, I was too young for the real 60s, for the teenager 60s. So I was like, 5. 6 years old, everybody else was partying in the Haight-Ashbury. But my expectation was of a somewhat, normal life, being able to buy a house and a car and, family and all that kind of stuff and have a reasonable job that would actually pay for that. Because my parents' generation, folks that were born in the Depression, in the 50s, 60s, and even somewhat in the 70s, you could support a family on one income.
Right.
The taxes were lower. The cost of living was lower. Inflation was way lower. Your dollar bought amazing amounts of stuff. Now, the salaries were lower too. I mean, it was somewhat in scale. But compared to now, a single income earner in the 50s could do what a double income family cannot do in the 2020s.
Exactly.
What do you think?
Nope. Yeah, for sure. Terrible. Mm. Sometimes I think about just getting rid of everything and going to a little island.
Oh, there is one. Cape Breton. Have you heard about this? In fact, I was thinking of this. I have a friend that does not like to be around Wi-Fi. They're very sensitive to electromagnetic radiation. And there's a certain percentage of people that are. And it's like, just as I was sensitive to office machinery, I couldn't be around printing machines. The old Xerox things gave me an instant migraine.
Yeah.
And I never get headaches around those things. Mm-hmm. 5 seconds. I was like, in death-defying pain. It was barely death-defying. It was horrible. But anyway. Cape Breton Island. Have you heard about Cape Breton? No Wi-Fi, no internet. And they were looking for people to move. They pay you to go there, And this is a beautiful island. The scenery is gorgeous. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd probably have a culture shock.
Well, yeah, because you're now. Where were you? I don't want to get too personal here, but where are you in the computer age? Because I go back to before answering machines, technologically. So I watched all this kind of develop. But were you born into and grew up with computers? Just curious.
No, I mean, like when I worked in a real estate office at a very young age, like I was 18, and we had the electric typewriters, I was typing on an electric typewriter and had a cigarette in one hand.
Oh, okay. Those are the days. Yeah. So we're closer than I thought, Yeah. Oh, that's right. Cause I remember, okay, now I'm thinking back to last week's conversation. Yeah. Yeah. So, if you're not, like I say, if you're not born into computers, we use them, but we're not like the Borg, we're not genetically linked to them. I think kids today.
Go ahead. Yeah. I mean, I use the damn things, but they're, I get by to what I have to do. If there's anything, fancy that needs to be done, I'm going to need some help.
Yeah, see, we're still a generation that talks to each other, and then I look at the kids today, because I have an opportunity to, I still have a 1 day a week part-time job where I'm working with some younger folks, and it's fascinating. I ask them, what's betting? What's new? What's your latest adventure? And I don't know. What do you mean you don't know?
I send out handwritten notes.
Oh, my goodness. You are a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Wow.
I do them every day.
with cursive and loop writing? Do you still remember that?
Well, let's not get ahead here. I didn't say I was a good writer.
No, I'm just curious. No, because I learned penmanship back when I was go ahead.
I learned how to write in Italy, and I have terrible handwriting. And so do my kids. And my kids, we just laugh when we look at each other's handwriting, because I don't think anybody can read anything.
It's funny, because I remember way back in Toronto, and you may even know this place, Bedford Park Elementary School. That's where I went to school. And we played baseball on this tar, field. So if you fell, you really scraped your knees. It was pretty bad. But they didn't care. Because it was frozen in the wintertime. So it was ice then. So it was kind of crazy. Anyway, but I've still got my workbooks from grade, from first grade. And we had your lines were divided by three. And we actually learned, what they called loop writing, I guess what they call cursive now. I wrote really well in first grade. And somewhere along the way, I lost it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we type. But I had a Smith Corona manual that got me through through school all the way through college. You know, I never even had an electric. But, yeah, the old IBMs, as soon as you got to the work world, you know. But it's fascinating how this technology has changed. The point of all this conversation is that kids today are so reliant on computers and Google searches and things like that, although I use DuckDuckGo, they feel like they don't have to learn anything because no matter what they want to know, it's going to be supplied for them. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just to let folks know, the live chat is open. I'm actually going to monitor it this time, hopefully. So if anybody wants to type in a message, that works, especially if you don't have phone service or we're trying to figure out Skype. Like I said, Jen, I'm going to be checking messages periodically to see if she's able to check in. I was hoping she could because I wanted to kind of practice with folks before they come on because the Skype thing is a bit, and I have to learn more about how it works. All right, let's get down to the big issue. I've changed the name of the report, and I think I like what you were suggesting. So this is the now Laura Avalese from Canada with the Freedom Convoy Report. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay. So what's going on? What's the latest?
Oh, geez, there's so much in Ottawa.
You got an hour, so feel free.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just so overwhelming because I get so much information from all over the place. And then you hear things from, the mainstream media. Then you hear things that people are passing around social media. So I'm just getting my information right from the horse's mouth, which is Pat King. And he's one of the big convoy organizers. He's there. Him and the two big organizers do live updates and stuff. And I don't know if you've heard the latest. The Ottawa police have gone in and they said that they've started seizing all the Gary cans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard.
Which means the truckers, will not have gasoline to keep them warm and stuff. But what Pat had said on one of his talks is that they were taking, I think it's called purple gas, if I'm not mistaken.
What's and that? I've never heard of that.
It's
like jellied gasoline or something or what?
What did he say it was? It's farm gas. And apparently you're not allowed to have that.
Unless you're a farmer.
Either way, what's happening is it's funny because now there's memes going around that the new purse to carry is a jerry can. So people all around Ottawa are walking around with jerry cans. One guy brought in some jerry cans, and he was told that if he went back today, he would be arrested.
For trying to help people with gas. There are government programs that do just that. They give fuel oil to people in the winter because it's cold. And yet, the government of Canada, the police chief of Ottawa, is actually seizing gasoline from people that want to keep warm. So here's the big question. Is protesting now illegal in Canada unless you're Black Lives Matter, Antifa, a leftist, unless you're destroying billions of dollars worth of property? And I think we lost 25 Americans were killed last year in Antifa and BLM, protests and riots. They weren't protests. They were riots. Okay?
Yeah.
And little Justin, Mini Man is quite comfortable with that. And so apparently is the mayor, was it Jim Watson of Ottawa? And I didn't catch the police chief's name yet. But this could all be solved today.
They have signed, yesterday they signed an order that no honking is allowed for 10 days.
A honking ban.
Yeah.
So not only is there a free speech ban, but there's a noise ban. What is wrong with these people? So Laura, I want to start with this question. I want to get back to all the individual issues because I think we kind of get lost in the individual issues, even though they have to be reported. But the big question is freedom illegal? Is it now illegal in Canada and maybe possibly Australia? And of course here in the United States, we're going to have our own trucker thing starting in March. Is it now illegal to express your opinion? And is it now illegal in Canada to be free of these mandates? That's what it looks like.
In Halifax, they signed something saying that You're not allowed to support the convoys. You can't. There's all kinds of things. I don't know. It's so exhausting.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, this is why I like tell my fellow activists, keep your humor. Keep your humor.
People keep adding me to groups and stuff, and it's just I can't keep up with all the information because it's exhausting. I can't read it all, but I found yesterday just sort of skimming through some messages that yesterday a lot of us, me included, were just feeling down and defeated and, you know, hopeless. It's like, but, you know, one thing I think from the truckers is that they're not giving up, and that is the hope, I think, that we're hanging on to is that they just keep saying, we're not quitting. If you don't quit on us, we're not quitting on you.
Yeah, sneak in gasoline, do stuff. You know, there's going to be an underground. This is almost like slavery with the Underground Railroad, where black slaves were smuggled out of the South. You know, in this Underground Railroad, you're going to be smuggling in fuel and food and all kinds of things. It's become an occupation zone. This is like the Warsaw Ghetto. You know, and the truckers are now being the way that it's not as bad as the way the Nazis treated the Jews, obviously, but I'm saying, but you know, it's in the beginning stages that the truckers are now the modern day, you know, second class citizens to be demonized and oppressed by the government, you know, for doing what? For wanting to be free? That's their crime?
But the thing is they're now started something all over the world, right? So the world is watching. Benny.
The world is ready. Benny. The world is ready, too. That's the other thing. The world is watching, but the world is ready. Yeah.
I saw Twitter yesterday, and I think I reposted it. I saw a Twitter, someone wrote yesterday, if I can find it, that they feel that they're like Trudeau will resign next week. Have you seen the letter from Amanda Champagne? She's a U.S. attorney.
No.
She mentioned something.
I'm as bombarded by information as you are, and I try and sift through some of it. But quite honestly, I like to sort of distill things down as much as possible. I used to put like 50 articles at the bottom of my computer to try and get to them. And quite frankly, what I do now is just kind of summarize, put them in my brain, write some bullet points, and just kind of do the show, you know, because I want to talk about things. Not I don't have to recite all the information that's already out there. So what did this reporter say? Yeah, I'm curious now.
This Benny Johnson wrote on Twitter, I predict Justin Trudeau will step down next week. The freedom movement growing much bigger and more popular with every day. This is the worst political moment in Canadian history, and Trudeau will be remembered as a coward and villain and on the wrong side of history. 100% true. You know, I mean, he came out of his basement with yesterday.
What did little Justin have to say? I would start calling him little Justin. You need a really derogatory name for him, because ridicule is the most effective weapon against tyrants. Oh, it is? What do they call
happening
him?
What's happening is uncalled for. He said what's happening is uncalled for. It's disrupting people's lives. It must stop. And it's like, you know, and the citizens of Ottawa are suing, and it's like, I'm sorry. We've had nothing for 2 years. We've had no freedom for 2 years. Now we're fighting for your freedom, and you're trying to sue the truckers? Like, what is wrong with people?
Well, no, you've got it absolutely right. This is through the looking glass politics, as I call it. In other words, you know, the government is accusing the people of doing what the government is doing and then blaming the people for doing it when they're not. So everything's backwards. So the way I look at politics and the way I look at government is they are the inverse of freedom. And everything that comes out of them is backwards. So then when they say we're here to make you safe, they're really here to kill you. You know, that's an overt example, but it pretty much, you know, holds. When they say we're passing new laws to increase your freedom, they're really passing laws to increase their power. And so the idea, I don't think Justin Trudeau is going to resign for a second. There's no reason for him to. He loves power. He's obsessed with power. Power is his aphrodisiac. Power is what makes him get up in the morning. Power is what drives him and all these other politicians to do what they do. Because if power were not the object, if freedom were the object, if they actually represented the people of Canada, and the people of Canada do not want mandates, then the obvious solution is to get rid of the mandates. If they believe in the consent of the governed, that's what they would do, especially in the face of overwhelming evidence that these vaccines are snake oil. They're causing far more harm than good. The lockdowns didn't work. The masks don't work. The closures of schools didn't work. Kids are the least vulnerable to this thing. So everything they're doing is not working. It'd be bad enough if they're imposing mandates. You know, first of all, imposing mandates is wrong. But the fact that they're opposing mandates that actually, you know, were in some way beneficial, I mean, I could sort of understand it, but I'd still want my freedom and my constitutional rights because that's what we're guaranteed. Mandates can never exceed your constitutional rights, at least not in this country, even though, you know, people don't understand that yet. But the thing is, what they're doing, they're mandating death. I was reading something about a father that was denied his kids, some judge separated him from his kids because he's not taking a jab that it could be dangerous to him and to his kids. And this is insane.
So there's a realtor I work with, and I haven't seen him and yesterday I saw a post that he said, you know, I got my booster shot and I've been sick for the last 2 weeks, been trying to get better, and apparently he's in the hospital with an IV, and it's like, and, you know, I sent a text and I said, I hope you feel better soon. He's like, I'm working on it, you know, and
he needs to get out of the hospital. Hospitals are death centers now. Hospitals in this country, they are paying people $100,000 to die on remdesivir and ventilators. You know, what's going on in Canada? Is it the same problem? Is the Canadian health services, national health care, do they have the same financial incentives of the remdesivir ventilator death march?
I don't know.
I
would imagine so, but I'm not sure. I mean, we're governed a bit different when it comes to healthcare, but still, I know my own doctor has tried to push it on me, and I think,
ask him how much he's making, or she's making. Ask him how much your doctor is making by getting you getting a jab.
Well, I don't know if I'll ever go back. I think I'm moving away from Western medicine, and you know, I'm done. I think I'm going to take health into my own hands. I mean, I'm pretty healthy to begin with, but take health into my own hands and just, I've never had to go in for anything. I've always been healthy, but when you try to push something on me, when you know I've never even had a flu shot, you know, that's ridiculous. And he's like, why do you not want it? So why don't you want it? I'm like, because they're bad. And he's like, no, they're not.
Well, okay. I'll make him prove it. Make your doctor, you know, have them prove it to you. Have them bring out the stats and figures and say, show me that this is so safe. Because I obviously from this show, you can get a ton of stuff. We have a whole, it's a private group, but we have a vaccine, you know, action project. In fact, Facebook closed down. We used to have a joint project with Dr. Zelenko, who's the one who gave hydroxychloroquine and told President Trump about it. You know,
I love Dr. Plank.
Oh yeah, he's been on the show a few times. You can go back and check his podcast. He's been wonderful. But we wrote a bill. In fact, I have Jerome Bell, who's running for Congress here in Virginia in the third hour, and we're going to talk a little bit about this. But about reforming the FDA. He and I wrote a bill to reform the FDA in the emergency use authorization process. And since so much of what happens in the United States is modeled by other countries, you know, feel free to take any of the bills that we have written already, you know, at writeyourlaws.com and share with your friends and, you know, family and fellow activists and see if this is something that, you know, my fellow Canadians, you know, might want to adopt as well. So these things is becoming much more of an international thing, what's happening.
Did you see that they called a state of emergency in Ottawa? They declared a state of emergency. Yeah.
Yes, freedom is an emergency. Yeah. Well, see, I would redefine all the terms. So whenever they say, you know, this is a state of emergency, just say, look, freedom is now an emergency, you know, to the government in Ottawa. I would rephrase everything. But tell me about the state of emergency. To what extent and what are they afraid of? And, you know, what's the emergency?
That part, I have to think that I don't remember.
This is more gut feeling. You know, more,
so
more interesting.
50%.
Yeah.
But 50% of the police force has now resigned.
What?
Yeah.
Say that again. That's breaking news. 50%
of... 50% of the Ottawa police, according to Pat and some other places I've seen, they've resigned. Yeah.
So they've left the stormtrooper mentality behind, and the officers that believe in freedom, they've left. It's pretty much, I bet you that's the way it works. Betcha.
Yeah, and last night I watched another video where this guy was videotaping right there, like their eyes, their faces, is a couple of cops saying, do you feel good about what you're doing? Like, do you feel okay to take away gasoline from the truckers? Like, are you, like, feeling okay with what you're doing? Like, do you sleep at night? And, like, there was just, like, no movement. Their faces were frozen. Well, their eyes were frozen because they had a mask on. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't sleep well, so I wake up in the middle of the night, and I thought about it at 4:30 this morning, and I thought, you know, they're as cold as ice, and I'm thinking to myself, they're either going to resign or commit suicide, or they're just like a Justin Trudeau where they have zero emotion. But those are the three things that I was thinking about: resign, commit suicide, like go into a shell, like basically, because what I saw disturbed me, like the way they stood there. And I thought to myself, especially with what this guy was saying to them, and I thought, wow, as a human being, you know, like I would have like melted and fallen apart right there on the spot. Like, what are you going to tell your children and grandchildren what you did? What are you going to tell them? You know what I started reading?
Tell me.
And it started disturbing me because I know, you know, the history. Man's Search for Meaning. Have you read that book?
No, I have a terrible problem. I get bored so quickly when I read that I generally, you know, I can get through like two paragraphs and my mind's already, I'm ADHD, you know, dangerously so. I read short articles and I can read a book, but it takes me a long time. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the story of Viktor Frankl. He was part of the concentration camps.
Okay. Where?
In the wartime, and they
Germany,
took
Russia,
them.
Where?
No. Germany.
Germany, okay. Concentration camps.
And the concentration camps, when they were taking them to the gas chambers, and just the first few pages, I was like, oh, God, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through this book.
Yeah, and they lived it.
It's so depressing.
Oh, yeah.
Because already just the first few pages I read, I could see the similarities of what we're going through.
Oh, there you go. Now, isn't that interesting? And see, this is what people are realizing worldwide, that this is, and we've seen this before. We've seen this movie. You know, we've seen how Russia, you know, was taken over by communists, and how China was taken over by communists, and how Germany was taken over by Nazis, and how Italy was taken over by fascists. And the result is always the same. Same thing in Cuba and Venezuela and in Cambodia and any other country you can think of where a totalitarian government of the left, which is always the left, totalitarians are always leftists because they believe in absolute government control. The opposite, of course, is anarchy, you know, which is the absolute right. But, you know, where everybody else falls is kind of in between there. But the totalitarian stories are very similar. And it always starts off the same. Confiscate the guns, you know, control the media. Control education, control, you know, the culture and the pop things. And then the shortages and the restrictions and then the death camps. And this is how it goes.
And
we know the plan.
Exactly.
We've seen it. Yeah.
Yep. And the slaves, basically, they were told what to do. And you got, if you did well, you would get these coupons. And you could,
oh, it's China.
You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You could give your
social
coupons
credits.
Yes. For soup or for a cigarette. And like it just already, like just the first few pages, I thought, oh my goodness, like this is Canada. Like we're like literally in Canada, I'm almost seeing that. It's disgusting. I'm still I think we're in shock.
Well, see, now this, you said earlier that this is Canada's worst moment. It's actually Canada's finest moment. This is Canadians being Canadians. This is Canadians standing up for Canadians against your own government of tyrants. Australians are doing the same thing. This is happening. France has big demonstrations. It's interesting. Macron went to talk to Putin. And they probably said, do you know anything about this war? And it's like, I don't know anything about this war. This is all the United States. This is all Brandon, you know, doing it for ratings. So I'll talk about that in a bit. But, you know, the calmer heads are out there, maybe. But the people, you know, us regular folks, this is why Action Radio is so perfectly timed. It's the first thing I've ever timed well in my life, that now we have the technology, you know, through the internet, through social media, and then the ability to talk to you. In fact, Bianchi's on the line now. I'm going to bring him into the conversation in just a second. But the ability to do this, and, you know, there's going to be a time probably Thursday when I'll have, you know, Australia, a couple of calls from Australia on the line, you know, and there's going to be a day when you are on and Jen from Australia and some folks from Israel and maybe one or two from New Zealand. We're all going to be talking about freedom all over the world at the same time on this show. And so the ability to change this, people are realizing that the government really is the enemy. You know, you gave them so much power, you know, Canadians, you gave up your guns, you know, you gave up the freedom. And now people are realizing, whoop, you know, it's like the frog in the boiling pot has suddenly jumped out. It's like, oh, hell, I don't want this. You know, this is where you are. And it's a shock you know, instead of fighting for your freedom against a foreign enemy, you know, in World War II, you know, Canada, the United States, you know, the Western world, you know, fought the Nazis, fought the Empire of Japan. You know, and it was a very clear enemy, and they were in uniforms, and, you know, you could see them coming. You know, you had waves of battlefields and battleships and airplanes and armies and all that kind of stuff. It was very clearly defined. When you're fighting your own government, it's not so clearly defined. You know, and people realize they voted for the people. You know, they voted for the people that are taking away your freedom. So now you got to put a whole bunch of new people in and a whole bunch of new laws in, and this is where it's going to get complicated. Let me get your reaction to pretty much my ramblings, and then I want to ask Pianchi for his comment. What do you think, Laura?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm
okay.
I'm just I don't know. My mental health
fine.
Is not. It, yeah,
no, you'll be fine.
Just,
see, I've been an activist ever since I was in, I think, high school. So for me, I treat this as a game. And I don't get burdened. I don't get exhausted. I keep my humor and I keep my perspective. I take my victories when I can, and losses, you know, are just a challenge. So there's, you know, I should give like an activist workshop of how to keep your perspective. It looks hopeless. It's really not. You're actually winning. You just don't know it yet. Okay. The reason I know you're winning is the government's, you know, declaring emergencies and trying to take away your gasoline. That's how you know you're winning.
Exactly. And that's the thing, like, you know, people need to realize that these, you know, it's funny, one of the coordinators, Envoy, I watched him last night do a talk, and he said, it was funny because the girl said to him, so, like, now what? Like, you know, there's no gasoline, and he's like, well, it's time for me to move Big Red, and he's talking in ways where it was really actually inspiring, because he says, what they don't understand is we are truckers. We end up in snowstorms where we have to sit for days on end.
Mm-hmm.
He says they don't know. What they don't know is who they're dealing with. And that was what he said was so powerful last night that I thought, wait a minute, like, we don't know who truckers are. We don't know what truckers
do.
I
was a Teamster for years. you know, I didn't drive big rigs, but I know truckers. Yeah, yeah. It's an amazing group.
But what
he's
saying is, I don't.
Yeah.
The majority of people don't, unless you know a trucker. And
mm-hmm.
so what he gave was a little bit of insight on, like, he started chuckling and said, well, we're just going to do this little slow roll.
Yeah.
And whatever that means. And you know, and we're not going to block anybody or anything. We're just going to. And it was like, and just the smirk on his face, I thought, wow, I feel like I'm like looking at Superman or something, you know.
Well, he's saying to the Canadian government, is that all you've got? Well, you're stealing our gasoline. You're taking our money. We'll get more money. We'll get more gasoline. What do you think you're doing?
That's, yeah. That's part of it. Exactly.
Yeah. No, he knows. He understands. He knows that this is going to be one. He knows that eventually the government's going to have to cave. And it's going to take a while because they'll do anything to keep their power. Let me get Bianca in the conversation. Bianca, you're on with Laura Avalese. I just love saying that. From Canada. Welcome, Bianca.
Well, it's a good conversation you've had. Good points that's been made out. If I was reading right, I see where some businesses form their own GoFundMe.
Well, there's an alternative. I've got it here in my notes somewhere. But yeah, there's an alternative. GoFundMe, which I made a rather comic thing as in Go, F star 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 me. I'll let you guys figure out the rest. But it's Give Send Go. I believe it is. You can find it. It's the alternative to GoFundMe. We should talk about that too, Laura. But Bianca, why don't you get in on this and talk about the funding, because this is a fascinating story.
Yeah,
too.
You should talk about that so people would know that they have an alternative that will produce the same results, the intended results. And after this is over, conservatives in particular, but also the good-minded people should remember all these obstacles that's being put forth by businesses and other concerns, whereas you just boycott them in the future. Don't have anything to do with them. I've done it myself on many entities that was against Donald Trump. And that's what you have to do. Don't forgive so fast. Matter of fact, don't forgive at all, because you're fueling the enemy.
Laura?
Well, the other thing that people need to do is, and I saw it on another meme yesterday, is to stop watching the news, obviously, because if they have nobody watching, what are they going to report? And secondly, one guy did mention that, we will, anyone that has stocks, like, pull your stocks out of these, media organizations, and then see where they end up, right? Now, someone from a friend of mine from Connecticut yesterday shared a post from Fox Business, which I have not seen, so I don't know the validity of this, but it says that GoFundMe backtracks on redistributing money for Canadian truckers under threat of fraud investigation.
Yep.
It's the first time I'm seeing this, so I haven't heard it or seen it on any of my convoy groups or on any Telegram, so I don't know if this is true or not.
Well, as I understand it, this, and I've got articles on this, I've been watching following Canada Free Press, where I used to write. I have a bunch of articles from them on and if you want to find those, I'm going to writeyourlaws.com in the article section. But they originally they got $9 million in the GoFundMe account. Keep in mind, these are the folks that fund BLM, fund Antifa, fund the leftist causes. So this is definitely an anti-freedom fundraising source. And I guess they take a portion of it for their own personal profits. But what they did was they confiscated the money, and they were going to give it to BLM, Antifa, and other left-wing causes. That's theft. You can't, you can't steal money intended for one purpose and then give it to whoever you damn well please. That's that, and they should have been, if they actually did that, they should have been arrested for it. But I don't think the government of Canada would do that, because they want the money confiscated. So then they said, okay, fine. I think it's up to $10 million now. So then they said, okay, because they're being investigated by 16 attorney generals, I believe, in the United States. Now it's $10 million. But now that money's gone back, okay? So now the news source, in fact, I just put it on your Facebook Messenger, if you want to multitask, and I post it on my page, it's Give, Send, Go. And so Give, Send, Go.
And they've already raised, what was it, as a $2-3 million, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
now here's what's interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, this is a Christian group. This is now, and we know what happened to the churches in Canada, under the lockdowns. Religion was declared illegal, as was commerce, for businesses that weren't, huge and giving money to the politicians. But the churches, this is why this is so interesting. This is a Christian organization, Give, Send, Go. And I'm going to have to talk to them and get an account myself, you know, for anybody that wants to contribute to Action Radio. But because I've got PayPal right now, which is the direct thing, that's going to be more for sponsors. You know, this, in fact, they may want to, you know, promote what we're doing here at Action Radio, you know, writing bills and hopefully getting connected. So I need to, if you can, I'm not sure if you know Pat King or just listen to his stuff, but I'd love to get, I've sent him, you know, who we are, but people, let me ask you a question, sort of a general, people don't understand, I think, yet, and I understand why they don't understand, but there's kind of like a block, the idea that people can write their own bills. People are not really grasping the concept and the potential of, if I can reach the truckers and write some legislation that removes the power of the Canadian government to mandate these things, and they say, here, not only are we here to protest and get our freedom back, this is the means to do it. This is the bill right here. And they just walk it into Parliament and say, by the way, here it is. And you make a big press conference about it. You get some like real news. You know, you get the alternative news. You get the good folks, you know, to cover the fact that you're going in and have everybody make videos saying, this is the bill. This is what it looks like. Photograph it. Look at it. Make it very simple and say, you know, section so-and-so of the Canadian code is hereby repealed. You know, mandates are repealed. Just walk it right into Parliament. That would be amazingly powerful. And it's never been done. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what I'm trying to do. But I know people aren't grasping the concept yet. It's somewhere, somehow, some way. It's going to take one activist in Canada, one activist in Australia to go, that's an interesting idea. Let's try that. That's what we have to do. But there's still a block. There's still, you know, even my own reporters sometimes, they don't quite, you know, see the potential of where this can go. Got any insight for me?
Mm-hmm.
Into Canadians? Mm-hmm. You know, how do I connect with the leaders of this convoy and say, look, you know, we can, I'm not going to write it for them. I've already made, you know, a personal rule. I will not write the actual language for other nations because you guys have to do it.
Go ahead. Did you send him an email?
Oh, to Pat King? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I've been on his Facebook page. I sent him an email. I sent, with details, the whole bit. But again, you know, he may just look at it and go, Action Radio, what's that? I don't care. It's probably a competitor. And he may just toss it. He may never even read it. I mean, this is the problem. The minions, you know, the gatekeepers, the people that have vision are the ones at the top, like the Pat Kings, okay? So, but to reach them, I have to go for the minions that don't have vision. That are just, you know, screening everything and going, you know, Action Radio, citizen legislature, what's that? I don't understand. And out it goes. So this is my difficulty, is reaching the people I need to reach.
Yeah, I don't direct contact to him. I just listen to him, follow him. Yeah. But, you know, I can...
Friends of friends.
Try. Yeah,
friends of
exactly.
friends, yeah. That's how I met Dr. Zelenko, friends of friends. You know, so I know how it works.
Did you see what... a little bit of off topic from the convoy, but with Joe Rogan.
Yeah, let's talk about Joe Rogan. Yeah, I want to get Pianki's take on that too. I made a post yesterday that if you think Joe Rogan's controversial, you obviously haven't listened to Action Radio. You know, compared to what we say, compared to what he says.
Yeah,
you know, but I don't have 60 million listeners, and you know,
yeah,
if I did, I'd have a.
Did
you
see Rumble?
Ferrari.
Did you see What's Rumble's that? Offer? $100 million years to move all his stuff to Rumble.
Yeah. Now, what does that say? First of all, Rumble. Do you know who owns Rumble now?
No.
Truth Source. You know who's behind Truth Source?
I know Truth Social.
Truth Social. Excuse me. You know who's behind Truth Social?
Yeah, Trump.
Exactly.
The man.
Okay, so there's a story that hasn't been reported yet. Rumble, I believe they were just bought by or owned by or connected with, or there's some kind of partnership. Rumble and Truth Social have a connection. Pianki, do you know anything about that?
I
just heard, you know, Rumble.
No, I can't. I can't keep up with all of these things. I've heard I can't keep up with all of them. But it's good to have someone to fill in where you can't. That's
the
important thing.
This is where I need a producer to be able to look up these quick things. Or anybody wants to type in something on live chat. Let me start using live chat more. So if you know the connection between Truth Social and Rumble, I'm going to look at it right now and see if I can find, you know, something real quick. So yeah. Let's. I've already got my GoFundMe alternative Gives and Go. I post that already. So let's go. No here. Truth Social. Truth Social. And Rumble. Let's see what comes up. It's live radio. I can do this. Yeah. So Truth Social and Rumble. Truth Social, rumble.com. Ooh, here we go. Truth Social is America's big tent social media platform that encourages... they got the same thing, Truth Social and rumble.com. It looks like they are... Oh, that's a video. America's big tent. Okay, so I probably have to play something and then do this. Oh, here we go. This is what I'm looking for. Rumble and Truth Social are teaming up. Nunez leaves. And I got a video, too. Nunez leaves. You know, so Devin Nunez left Congress. I think it was a mistake. But it looks like Rumble and Truth Social are teaming up. So that's why Rumble can offer $100 million. You know, Trump could write a check for that himself, you know, out of petty cash. What do you think? This is interesting. Yeah. Okay.
It's very interesting.
Huh. So here's what's happening, and it's going to happen worldwide too. The conservatives are finally getting their act together and creating alternatives to the leftists. And so I'm going to go to Truth Social as soon as it opens. I'm already on the waiting list. So as soon as it goes, I'm moving all my political stuff there, and I'll post my, you know, hamburgers and bacon, you know. I'll post my silly things on Facebook. But the good stuff's going to be on Truth Social. You know, my videos, when we start making more videos, they're going to be on Rumble. They're not going to be on YouTube. You know, all this stuff's going to change. But you look, you know, and Pianca, I want your opinion on this too. We're really becoming a split world. The leftists, who are the segregationists, who are the original slave owners, who started, you know, the Confederacy in the United States, the leftists, the Democrats. Democrats are the party of slavery, the party of segregation, the party of dividing by race, you know, sex, and every other category they can think of. They have actually caused us to create a conservative, an independent, a patriot world for ourselves in social media, in search engines, in give, send, go, as opposed to GoFundMe. They're actually, we've got two results going on here. You want to talk about a split? This is one of the most fundamental splits, I think. And every nation that believes in freedom has a certain percentage that believe in tyranny, and those folks seem to end up in government. So I'm curious to both of your opinions on that. Laura, do you see the split?
Well, there's a split everywhere, I think, right?
Okay.
I mean, I don't know.
I see it. Well, okay, Pianchi?
Well, yes, there's a split, and it's good. My email account, I've removed a lot of addresses. I've removed a lot of telephone numbers because I'm not having anything to do with these who was called my friends. They hold you back. It's just like within Black America, you got this notion by these Democrats, for instance, like the issue about you got Black lawmakers blast plans for monument to Justice Thomas. And you have one Georgia lawmaker is calling him a hypocrite and a traitor. Now, I can understand
to
calling
what?
A hypocrite. Right. What is he a traitor to? They act as if Blacks are a separate nation within the United States, and they all should march to the same beat. That is totally, totally misconstrued. And they need to stop it. If you got an idea you want to run with, I don't want to have nothing to do with it. Well, go ahead on and do what you're going to do.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We have Jerome Bell's coming back on the show in the third hour, and he's a former, I think he's chief, so he's a Navy chief. I guess he was a chief petty officer for, you know, a gazillion years, like 27 years. He's Black, he's conservative, you know, and it's fascinating. This is Black History Month, and of course one of the questions I have for him, and Pianchi, feel free to stick around or call back, but what's interesting is Black History, and I got to talk to Laura on this in a little bit too, but Black History Month, you know, is really the history of Black conservatives. And you don't hear about that. You look at the Republicans, you look at Black slaves became Republicans. You know, they believed in the party that freed the slaves as opposed to the party that enslaved the slaves. You know, and it's such a strange hypocrisy. And you want to talk about hypocrites now. The Democrat, you know, Black liberals are supporting the party that enslaved and segregated Black Americans. You want to talk about hypocrisy or idiocy or just, you know, blindness? That's what I see. Pianchi?
Well, Black history is actually American history, the history of the United States and all the people that contribute to the EDBD pieces that have made this a great nation. And that's the way I taught my children. And I still teach my grown siblings that way also. We're not a separate nation. We are part of a greater nation.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. Well, we haven't talked about this in Canada, but black population of Canada, and you know, is it? I don't know what the history of black folks in Canada is, but I'm kind of curious. Is Canada as divided, you know, ideologically? I mean, skin color becomes an ideology. You know, we have, you know, Democrat black folks and conservative black, and it's a very interesting split that your skin color in the United States seems to, you know, for a lot of folks, give a predisposition to a certain life, belief system, everything. And as Pianca and I talk about this all the time, I'm trying to understand it because it makes no sense to me. But what's the situation in Canada? Are you as racially categorized and divided and quoted and affirmative action as the United States?
I don't think we're like that as bad as it is in the United States.
Okay.
I see more of that in the U.S. than here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. I mean, we're known to be nice people, right? Like we're not fighters. We're, I don't know.
Well, see, this is why this is so interesting. I think what's going on now? It, yeah.
Look, and there's division everywhere, right? But
mm-hmm.
I don't. We're definitely nowhere near, I think, like the U.S.
Yeah.
I don't.
I was watching.
Anyway.
Yeah, I was watching a news clip. There was a Jamaican Canadian citizen talking about his brother. You know, standing beside a white guy. He says, "This is my brother, man. We are Canadians." It was great. It was a really thick Jamaican accent, and the guy's like, "Oh yes, this is my brother here from Jamaica." Eh? You know, just the contrast in accents was hysterical. And this is the thing that the left doesn't understand. As much as they try and divide, you know, we conservatives, patriots, Jamaicans, you know, independents, we don't care. We don't care. We see people. And they see groups, and they don't understand. They don't understand that we don't see groups like they do, and that they just go ahead. Laura, what do you think?
I think what's pissing Trudeau off is the fact that, you know, he's divided people, and they've tried to make people hate each other for mm-hmm. 2 years, and then you know, in 1 week, people united, like, you know. Whether you are black or white or, you know, native or whatever you were. It's funny because I think that there was maybe some kind of, you know, like the people from Quebec don't like the people from Calgary or something like that, because I've seen mm-hmm. some comments that they're all hugging and kissing and, you know, helping each other out. So,
mm-hmm.
Like I said last week, one of the trucks had written a story and said, you know, they wanted the Great Reset. Well, we're giving them the Great Awakening. And
that's exactly what's happening. Yeah, yeah. Well, you've got French-Canadian truckers there. You know, you've got English-Canadian truckers. You've got truckers from all over the country. You know, uh-huh. And I don't see any – I've never heard of any disputes between French-Canadian and English-Canadian truckers. They don't care. They're truckers. You know,
yeah.
This is a particularly interesting, it's like bikers. I'm surprised that like the bikers for Trump are there. And I have contact with our Northern Florida bikers for Trump, you know, and I'll talk to Bernadette and, I think it's RKRJ, RT. I forget his initials. I'm terrible at that stuff anyway, but, you know, don't be surprised if you see, you know, the United States rally in Washington in March sometime, if there aren't as many bikers as there are truckers. You know, so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
Oh, yeah.
And,
so
yeah.
I think that's about to happen, too, very soon.
Okay. Well, it's a little icy for the motorcycles in Canada right now. I mean, they picked the wrong season. Why didn't they just wait for, like, you know, April? You know, why now? Well, that's another question we haven't asked.
Well,
why now? Why did this happen now? The worst possible, middle of, you know, starting in January. What kind of an idiot starts a protest in January? Jeez. What's wrong with you people?
Well, the thing is that obviously it was because the mandates were being put in place now for the truckers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
well, but, that's true. Yeah, the cross-border thing. Yeah.
But so the trucker,
ahead.
I mean, the bikers will be out soon enough.
Okay. Oh, Canadian bikers, eh? This is going to be fun. I do my old Canadian accent. This will be great. you know, actually it's going to be really fun when we have Canadian, Australian, Israeli, New Zealand, all these accents are going to be on the show at the same time. It's going to be great. Can't wait. But if you've got all those trucks in Ottawa right now, what's happening on the shelves, on the store shelves, you know, and the, you know, the furniture deliveries, the produce deliveries, the, how about the government itself? Are truckers, are they boycotting deliveries to government agencies, for example, saying, yeah, screw you. If you can't make, you know, if you can't get rid of your mandates, we're not going to deliver to you. What's going on?
Well, I don't see any boycotting. I mean, you know, and I went grocery shopping yesterday or the day before. And I mean, produce is harder to getting harder. Like, I know that. And the prices, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, the prices have just shot up like crazy, right? But. You know, I think the businesses in Ottawa are having trouble because they can't open because there's no access or something like that. But who knows? But there's definitely a 10-day honking ban. They will get.
I'm sorry. That cracks me up. Well, anybody you can connect me to with Friends of Friends would be a huge benefit. Pianki, got anything on that? I think what I might let Laura go play both things I have to play. And Laura, unless you want to stick around for Shelby's report, you're welcome to do that too, of course. Pianki, you got some insights for us here?
There's a lot of things out there to talk about. I see where Cuomo is saying he has been vindicated, so he's thinking about running again. I don't understand.
Well, he wants to kill more people in nursing homes, Democrat. But he didn't kill enough. What, Cuomo didn't kill enough people in nursing homes the first time? Then he wants to come back?
Well, apparently you've got DAs and legislatures in New York that just don't see it that way. Yeah. And it's just awesome that when you think about it, you've got these DA district attorneys, and a lot of them are black, like Kim Fox in Cook mm-hmm. County, Illinois. And then you are reading about another one. I think in Sacramento, and they're letting these felons go. Kim Fox let reportedly 29,000 in Illinois go in mm-hmm. Cook County. So this is just remarkable how they continue to do things that regresses to the progress of the area and the country.
Yeah. Let me ask, Lord, can you stick around or do you have to leave? I'm sure, you know, you have other.
I know. I actually have to. I've got a Zoom course this morning, so.
Okay. Well, yeah. Do you have any contact information or groups or Facebook pages or, you know, where can we get your book? I mean, anything you want to give, that's part of the deal here. If you're nice enough to come report, you know, on Action Radio, please
awesome.
Feel free.
Thank you. But maybe next week we can talk about my book and I can tell you okay. where to get it. It's called Breaking Barriers by Laura Avalez, and you can definitely get it on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, breaking barriers. I think you just lost part of the word there, which happens sometimes on the phone, you know, transmission. So breaking barriers on Amazon. There we go. Okay. Well, let's do it next week. Let's see what other revelations we have. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Have a great day.
Yeah, great day too. There we go. The Laura Avalese. I just love saying that. I do. It's so much fun. From talking to us from Toronto. So, Pianki, hang on a second. Shelby's going to join us in just a little bit, and I'm going to play a couple things here real quickly while I have a chance. Otherwise, you know, it gets crazy around here. And we'll be right back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley. our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com, BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's W-Y-L. W-Y-L comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio. Dangerously cool. We're back. I got Pianki here. Live chat is open. We've got a little bit of time. Shelby's going to call in here pretty soon. We'll talk to our cruise and travel. But in the meantime, Pianki, you had some things you wanted to bring up. What's on your mind?
Well, that about Thomas I just read this morning. That's some other thing. You know, you and Peter was talking about the electromagnetic force.
Mm-hmm.
And how this works. You know, they have a bomb that's called a HEMP, H-E-M-P, which is high altitude. But what I was going to make mention to is that I don't know if you ever done experiments when you were a kid and when you would take a coil, we would wrap a coil around a wooden pencil or whatever, wire.
No, I wasn't. I didn't do it as much. My father tried to get me interested in a crystal radio set.
Let me kind
and
of
I
run,
wasn't,
run this.
That's about as close as I got. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what happens if you take a magnet? Mm-hmm. It has to be direct. If you take a magnet and run it, just pass it across that coil, you would induce electric current in the coil, and you can light a light with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that's how a guitar pickup works too, right? A guitar pick, because I play electric guitar. That's basically it's a magnet, you know, surrounded by a copper wire coil, creating an electric field which takes the vibrations of the strings and translates them to an electric signal. Right? Isn't that how it works?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I'm not astute on electric guitar. I'll tell you something else. If you take a fluorescent bulb, and we used to do this when we was kids, we used to walk through the cemetery where these high-tension wires would come across and coming from the power station, and a fluorescent tube would light up, and we would have our lightsabers back in the day.
Oh, yeah, but you can't crash
it
against
light
each other
just
too
like
hard.
A lightsaber.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't crash them against each other because it'll explode, but yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
people don't realize that.
Do.
Yeah, 10% of the electricity,
saying,
I think it's every, I forgot what the distance is, but like 10% of the electricity is gone, like every 10 miles or whatever it is of line. So this, they have to generate so much more to get enough electricity to where it's going. Maybe it's every 100 miles, but whatever it is, they lose a ton of electricity out those high-tension power lines. So yeah, you can light your fluorescent bulbs. You can probably light whole houses on the power that's wasted. That leaks.
Well, high-tension lines, they use alternating current because they use direct current. The line would heat up and just melt. But the alternating current changes direction 60 times a second.
Right.
But what I was getting at...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Your miniature electronics, like you find in your watches, like you find in appliances, automobiles, when you set your alarm for your house and so on, those coils are much, much, much finer in wire diameter. Matter of fact, some of them may be as thin as a human hair. So that same electromagnetic force would burn them up unless you have them shielded. And that's what I was trying to get at, just because you're talking about the grid. But there's so many other things that we encompass in our lives. Even the computers on your automobile, if they're not shielded or they take the magnetic force and direct it to ground where it can't get to the electronics inside the case, poof, they go.
Well, the whole point of a battery, I understand it too, is that's a shock absorber. So the alternator generates a lot of power, and it doesn't go directly to the electric circuits. They'll fry them, but it goes to a battery, which meters the power out at a consistent rate that the electronics are rated for. Isn't that how it works?
Yeah, you're right. The battery is like a storage, and it can expand, and the surges that you would get off of. I know you don't remember this. We used to have the old automobiles. Like in the 50s, they used to have a generator rather than an alternator. And as
yeah,
the car
my
comes
time.
To a stop at yeah. the stop signs,
right.
and the engine started decreasing in RPM, well, the generator would slow down too, and your lights would dim. But when you put your foot on the gas to go, the engine speed up, the generator speed up, and your lights come back to full brightness. So it's sort of the same thing.
Yeah. So with an alternator, which is alternating current, you know, that maintains the power even at a lower RPM, it's still generating consistent power?
Oh, absolutely. The way the poles and the stator is situated at 120 degrees, sometimes it may even break them up a little bit different. You know, 320 degrees make 360 degrees a complete circle. So
Right. Not
to get too technical, we really don't want to see, though, EMP bombs going off in our atmosphere because it would cause way more problems than what you would imagine.
Well, from what I understand, sun solar flares do it too because it's still radiation. So you're still talking about, and we, you know, this is why I was asking Dr. Pryor. In fact, I used to talk to Shannon Rice about that, who's on the city council here in Milton, Florida, about burying the power lines. you know, putting them underground. And is that a shield? It's a shield against EMP. It's a shield against hurricane and thunderstorm and lightning activity. It's a, you know, because I had a lightning strike about, you know, 50 feet from my little cottage here, blew out a transformer, you know, and I was off the air real fast. It was just gone.
Well, you know, about the putting them underground, you have to put them way underground because you come walking along and walk across where an underground a transmission cable is, it can cause some serious harm to you. If you got a hearing aid, if you got a pacemaker, so on, so on, so on.
Huh.
So that's if you got really a lightsaber. Where they are now in the air.
I mean, you could actually stick them in the ground, your fluorescent lightsaber light bulbs. But that's funny about, I've heard about the power lines that you can actually, you know, hold a, you know, a fluorescent bulb anywhere near a tower. Because you hear that crack, anytime you hear that crackling noise, that's wasted electricity. That's kind of funny. All right, we got Shelby, so I'm going to get to her here, and we're going to talk cruise and travel.
You know, one thing real quick.
No, that's okay. You can stick around, too.
We used to tune our CB radio antennas with a fluorescent board. You know, you loosen the set screw, you raise the antenna up or down until the bulb is at its peak brightness, tighten it down. Now you got that antenna tuned just right.
Well, that's interesting. You're just full of fun things to tell us. All right. I love it. Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go. And so the mystery continues, the ghost hospital ship trailing our cruise lines. We're all in on this. Pia, I don't know if you heard about this, but Alan Dawson in Belize is working on it. He actually sent a picture it's on our cruise and travel page. It's a bit far away, but we're looking into it. And so let's get the latest. Have you been able to find any further evidence or even a ship name or a registry for this mysterious hospital ship that's taking COVID positive passengers off a fully vaccinated cruise ship? Good morning, Shelby.
No. Hi. How are you doing? Good morning.
I had a great time. Yeah, we just talked to Laura for an hour. She's wonderful and has all kinds of information from Canada. Pianki's on the line, and we've got a busy show. We got Josie coming up at the bottom of the hour, and candidate for Congress, Chief Jerome Bell, is going to be with us in the third hour. So it's a busy day. I like it busy. It's more fun.
Wow, sounds great. Well, I'm interested to hear the big revelations with Canada, but no, I don't have any information on this cruise ship. I haven't had a chance to research anything, but it doesn't seem... I'm sure if you had looked and you didn't see anything, it wouldn't be fast.
No news on it. This is what's so intriguing to me. There is no news. You know, and in fact, I got the Belize, I sent this to Alan, the Belize port, you know, ships coming and going. I got the schedule, and so they tell, and this is all ships. This isn't just the cruise lines, and nothing's there, you know, and yet I got a picture of the ship that's sitting right there. So no one's talking about this. And of course, that really makes me curious, because if this were just a normal thing, say, hey, look, you know, if they were honorable, they'd say, yes, we still have a COVID problem. The vaccines are not working as well as we expected. So just as a precaution, you know, for the benefit, for the safety of the passengers, we're providing a hospital ship, you know, with the cruise ships in the ship line, so nobody's that far from medical care. That would be the smart and logical and prudent thing for a government to do, and people would accept that. Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, just in case someone's sick, we got a hospital ship right there. What a great precaution. Isn't that wonderful? But they're not saying that. Like, they're not saying anything. So now, you know what happens when I, you know, it's the lack of information that intrigues me more than an honest, open story. That's why I'm so curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. There's a lot of ways it could be. It could go. I don't know. I don't really think it's great to speculate. I don't want to speculate right now what I think that is. It's just not something I'm comfortable doing, but I can talk about what I do know.
Okay.
And as far as Belize goes, Belize has always intrigued me. I mean, I remember, like, you couldn't even Skype from there 10 years ago. They're so locked out with their internet. I don't, Belize is not an open government by any stretch. So, you know, it's definitely not surprising at all that they're not sharing any information, since they don't even let you use the whole internet when you're there.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
One of my cruise director's staff,
was trying to log on to do a lesson while they were in, while we were in Belize, and it's completely blocked. It was completely blocked. This is like, you know, 10 years ago or so, but still really surprising. But it doesn't surprise me because Belize is always, you know, Belize is very corrupt with their government. Anyway, okay. So what I do want to talk about, though, which is pretty interesting, is Canada still, because Canada's intriguing me.
Feel free.
Mostly, I just had another cancellation, which is so annoying because, you know, we work so hard at getting people booked, and I've had to implement a nominal cancellation fee. Does not even closely cover the amount of hours I put into working for these people. But just because they're scared, because there's so many restrictions to come back, even if you're vaccinated. So I did a little inquiry because I said, you know, this seems unreal. The requirements are just absolutely unreal. And so I asked a couple of my friends that have traveled, and they say all even for vaccinated people now, we're talking, not for unvaccinated. I don't even think you can go into Canada and be unvaxxed at this point. But returning from Lake Placid was brutal because the PCR test wasn't ready for them, because they're trying to test everybody that comes in the country. So out of pocket, another test at the airport to go back to Ottawa. And if they would have been negative, they would have had to quarantine 10 days with the first test before flying. But since there was no test available, they had to do another test at the airport and pay more money. Given another one to do a week later, wait for the results, and it was by day 12, if the test came back positive, they would have to use the last two tests, making it 14 days to get back home. So they called Health Canada to see what the point with the vax was. But that was one of the examples that someone wrote to me. I have another example that someone wrote to me that I was like, geez, this is just so insane. I'm like, where do you live? I mean, it is just insane. Canada is just crazy. Their whole idea of zero tolerance for COVID is bizarre. And they're all vaccinated anyway. So what else do you want from us? You know, like, you can't stop COVID. The vaccines are not stopping COVID. Maybe it's helping people stay out of the hospital. I think that's debatable, but whatever. That's not the point. Like, even if it did stop that, it's still, you can't stop life, and they're still stopping life. And I just find that so frustrating. So I had another cancellation from a Canadian who hasn't left his house in over 2 years. He lives in the woods, by the way. It's just,
wow.
So
that's crazy.
So annoying. Yeah, it really is.
Well, it's more than annoying.
He really deserves. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yes. It's the, like, it's not the right. That's not the right answer. You're right. It's more than annoying. But yeah, it's absolutely insane. They have to take this arrival test, but they don't have enough tests. And then they have all kinds of restrictions in place for quarantine. And I was, in the beginning, I heard it didn't matter as long as you were vaxxed. When they started all this, it didn't matter if you were vaxxed. They kind of didn't like enforce the rules, but I guess they are now. So that's you know, that's what we're at. So it's very frustrating, and I'm really wondering what's happening in Canada on the boots on the ground. I know Alberta lifted its restrictions and said it had nothing to do with the truckers. but what did Laura in a synopsis have to say? Is Canada moving forward? Are they being, I know they're also trying to say it's all violent, which is definitely not.
Well, here's what we talked about. Yeah, they're trying to say that they're trying to make violence happen. In fact, somebody, you know, some leftist actually drove into people. You know, that's the agent provocateur. That's like the Ray Epps kind of thing in Washington. Here's what I found the most fascinating thing that she said that has not made the news here is that 50% of the Ottawa police have resigned. That's huge. Okay, so we're breaking some news here. I think it's breaking in Canada, but people don't know that. So the police, you know, and I worked briefly in federal law enforcement after 9/11, you know, I was with Customs before they changed over to, you know, Customs and Border Protection, and they hired a bunch of really young folks, you know, in their 20s. And then they looked at us over 40 people and they said, okay, yep, we're going to put you in this box. You're going to stamp passports for 20 years. I'm like, I don't think so. Anyway, but it was fascinating insight into our government law enforcement. And one of the things I found was that you could divide officers up into those that believed in freedom, those that were just there to do a job, and those that believed in law enforcement supremacy. In other words, they should have the guns and nobody else should. It's like the Second Amendment in reverse. You know, they know what's best. They're able to make decisions. They'll determine what the law is. You know, they'll use their discretion. And so what I think is going to happen, what's happening in Canada, if you take a look at the police that have resigned, I guarantee you those are the ones that believe in freedom. Because they're the ones who are saying, I'm not going to steal gasoline from truckers so they freeze to death. That's insane. I'm here to serve and protect, not kill. You know, that's what. But then you've got the other officers, you know, the ones that just follow orders, that are in the totalitarian mindset, that say that these people are an enemy of the government. They're an enemy of the state. Therefore, they have to be punished, and stealing gasoline and taking their money and all the things that the police chief, this fascist police chief in Ottawa, is doing right now. They're okay with it. Because that's their mindset. You know, it's like the Nazi German, I'm just following orders, or it's the I believe in freedom, I'm going to resign, I'm not going to do this anymore. And that's why, and it seems to be a 50-50 split in the Ottawa Police Department. But I'd love to, you know, interview people from both sides of that. You know, why are you a totalitarian and why did you quit for freedom? That to me is fascinating. But that's the split. That's the way this is dividing up right now. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's fascinating that 50% of the Ottawa police have resigned and that hasn't hit the news. But it's so sad in the same respect that so much has not hit the news. That's correct, and then also that, you know, people are being planted to evoke you know, any angst
agent
in the area.
Provocateurs. Yeah, that's what they call it.
Yeah, that. I mean, this to me is like, I didn't realize that that was a thing until just recently, a couple of years ago. And and I find it like the whole Black Lives Matter thing. That's when I started to understand what people, political parties are doing from the top. And, you know, I talked to my aunt, who's very, 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 very Democratic, on the Democrat side, and definitely for immigration and for open borders, and she's absolutely on the side of vaccines, and she can't stand Florida. She's just simply who she is. And,
wow.
Yeah, it's really interesting. She's
Let's
always
get her
been
on the show.
Way.
Can we get her on the show?
No, absolutely not. I would never invite her. I would not. Oh, okay. I love her. I love her very much, but we have absolutely differing views in such a big way. It's very difficult to have conversations like this. Anyway, she was the one who mentioned it to me, interestingly enough, because she's like, these people are just planted. You know, they always had that. They've always had that since the 70s. This is always going on. And I had no idea. I really had no idea, like, that people were planted on one side or the other to provoke it. And I find that so disgusting, and I'm outraged by it, really, because I should know stuff like that too. But it's not something that's shared in the regular media. And I'm a busy woman. I mean, I can hardly have chance to breathe. It's just my life is extraordinarily busy, and I don't have time to be a private investigator on stuff that should be common knowledge on the news when I have a chance to actually tune in. So it's really upsetting to me that that's happening, and especially in Canada, where they're some of the most peaceful people in the world, and to point them in a light that's anything less than that is disgusting. And it's gross to me that the media is so overwhelmingly, you know, trying to subdue them, trying to talk differently about what the cause is about, trying to say it was white supremacists when that's hilarious, because, you know, Canadians are one of the most multinational.
The Jamaican guy that was on standing beside a white Canadian, you know, I said, this is my brother, man. You know, it's great. I'm here with my brothers,
really,
you know, in Canadians, you know, in Montreal. He's like freezing. It was a great video. But there's the Indian guys that said, oh, the white supremacists, we're the white supremacists he's talking about. I'm not white, and my friend's not white either. You know, there's a couple of Indian folks, you know, and they're all Canadians. And they all look upon the truckers are all looking themselves as Canadians. They're not seeing Indian Canadians or Jamaican Canadians or black or white Canadians or French or English Canadians. They're just seeing Canadians. And this is what the left never understands. This is fascinating. Shelby?
Yeah, it's super ridiculous, and it's sad, and people don't realize. And why would they? Again, I keep saying, why would they? Well, there is no there's just no reason. People are just too busy to do all this investigation. It's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But yeah, something I'm looking at right now is from the Canadian government. You need pre-entry test results, arrived can receipt with a letter with the vaccinated traveler's name, proof of vaccination that was uploaded to arrived can, a quarantine plan in case of positive results, travel documents and arrive can. Arrive can is like their passport, vaccine passport. It's
okay. Like a pre-clearance kind of thing?
Yeah, it's really intense. Okay. So I'm really disappointed with the way Canada has been viewed. I'm very proud of the Canadians that are trying to make an impact, but I'm again, you know, like most of the time, I just don't feel like you can fight City Hall. I mean, look at Justin Trudeau is really ignoring this, which is just to me a sign that they're going to, you know, just brush this under the rug. And what they did with the GoFundMe, that's horrible. Like, that just makes me so upset for people. It's just horrible that they're taking that money from the people that are supposed to have it. It's just wrong. It really is.
Let me give you an update on that. The money is being returned.
Yeah,
political pressure, and the fact that 17 or 16 governors in the United States are going to be investigating GoFundMe, or I've got another name for Go, you know, F me is what it seems to be right now. But give, send, go. There's an alternative. We talked about it earlier. I posted it on my page. I can do it in the reporter chat. But yeah, go to my page or just look up give, send, go. It's the Christian free alternative to you know, leftist GoFundMe. So the money's being returned. They were going to confiscate it and give it to Black Lives Matter, Antifa, you know, various other left-wing causes. But I want to focus on something that you're
being
mentioning.
Being returned
earlier,
to the guests? To the,
yeah,
to
it
the
is. Being returned to the donors.
It.
Yeah, it's going back to the donors.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. That's stupid. I mean, that's not what they wanted either. They just should be getting the money that they were supposed to be getting.
No,
that's
they're all giving it to Give, Send, Go. The donors are taking the money and sending it right to Give, Send, Go.
That's a ridiculous solution. They should be giving it to the truckers, you know, in whatever way they can distribute.
Well, okay. The money's going from GoFundMe. It's going back to the original donors. And then those original donors in large part are going to Give, Send, Go, which is the alternative, which is the better source. Give, Send, Go is giving the money to the truckers. Give, Send, Go is giving it to the truckers.
That's not the way it should be. The GoFundMe should just give it to the truckers because the truckers are going to lose a lot of money in that whole process. They're going to lose half.
But if it goes to another source and gets the truckers, it's going. What's happening is, I
know you have such belief in people. Believe me, I know the way people work with money. Half those people will actually go and do the donation. It's the way it goes. They're going to get their money back. They're going to forget about the cause. They're not going to be giving those truckers are going to lose out on quite a lot of cash.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
aren't going to do that extra step because people are freaking busy and they're not going to have trust in the system, and they're just busy. Like, they're inconvenienced by it all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's sad. It's super sad, and it's not right that GoFundMe, I don't care that they're giving back the money to the donors. Okay, fine, but that's not the point. The point is they have $10 million. It should have gone to the truckers. That's the point.
Oh, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. In fact, but I think what's going to happen is GoFundMe is going to take a huge hit, and rightly so, that I'm never going to have a GoFundMe account.
Yeah.
I'm never going to give anything to a GoFundMe cause for the rest of my life. You know, they've lost. And
true.
Again, this goes to the split in this country. Let's get Bianca in the conversation. Bianca, yeah, go ahead.
Well, what's really sad is if you lay down or bend over and take it. That's what's sad. Like you said, I don't do business with the Salvation Army anymore. After they came out with this ridiculous that white folks are supposed to forgive or ask black people for forgiveness. I don't do business with them. And that's the position you got to take. You can't prevent them from existing, but you don't have to exist alongside them.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't give anything to Salvation Army. This is the first year I've not given to all the little red buckets that I see. You know, I just didn't do it just for that reason, you know. Anyway, Shelby, you said something earlier talking about agent provocateurs and the fact that this is new. I'd say when I first learned, maybe Bianca has a story too, but when I was writing political articles and doing all kinds of things, back in the Clinton days in 1992 with Waco especially, I learned about agent provocateurs because I was talking to militia groups especially the Militia of Montana, which is a well-known, you know, group that was disseminating all kinds of information. And I'm sure that put me on several FBI lists. But the point was, the one thing they told me, and this is in their publications, is that the way to tell the FBI provocateurs or the government folks, they're the ones that try to get you to do illegal stuff. They're the ones that want you to blow things up. They're the ones like Ray Epps that wants you to go into the Capitol building when everybody knows it's, you know, it's guarded doors. You don't do that, you know, unless you're peaceful and you want to go visit the place, which is, you know, perfectly acceptable. But the thing is, the people that wanted to blow things up, if a militia member wanted to blow something up, they knew he was a Fed. They knew. If they want to make a gun that, from semi-automatic to fully automatic, or if they wanted to shorten the barrel beyond the legal length, those were used to entrap members of militia groups because they wanted to arrest them because they didn't like the fact that people were believing things different than the government wanted them to believe. So agent provocateurs, I think it's obviously a French word. This is a long-standing government practice. It probably goes back, you know, as long as there have been governments to sabotage their opposition or what they think is their opposition. Anyway, that's when I learned about it. It was back in the 90s.
Well, and you had the American Communist Party that going back in the 1920s
mm-hmm.
was trying to influence blacks to position themselves for race riots.
Yep.
1920s, I think 1930s up in Michigan. I can't think of the name of the city. And mm-hmm. then once again in the 1950s. So it's nothing new. Yes, it's been around for a lot longer than you think.
Yeah. Now they just indoctrinate the kids.
Well, I don't think it's not even that. I mean, I obviously once I realized that it happened at all, it sounds like it's always been happening. But
yeah.
I feel like that and people stealing people's wallets should be held at a very high felony offense, like, because it's just one of those things that, like, should not be an acceptable thing. There should be a reason to not do that, and that's really mm-hmm. severe because it is so it's just so insidious, you know, and it's very upsetting to me that this is still going on. And, of course, I'm Canadian, too, and I find it disgusting because I know I don't love living in Canada by any stretch because of the weather and because of the taxation and because of all the I just don't love living there. But I really love Canadians are very good-hearted people, and it just grosses me out that they've worked so hard to put something together. And, you know, I don't think I've ever seen Canadians come together, so many Canadians come together for something, for a cause, and then to be looked upon in the media as something completely opposite and show that to the world. And I have seen on social media, that's disgusting what they're doing. And it's just so ridiculous. Like, it's so upsetting that they can control the narrative like that. And I saw Laura on social media too. And they're getting restricted from Facebook constantly
mm-hmm.
for not doing thing wrong, but to say what's going on. And again, that in social media, that censorship is so frustrating because it's just a sign of where we're going. Like, and for me not to give to GoFundMe and for the 20% that actually understand what just happened because they had time to really investigate everything. Okay, fine. But that's not enough. And I don't think it's going to move the needle. And I feel very depressed about the future. I don't feel like there's all I see is more control and less opportunity and less money going to the truckers. And I don't, you're like, you can just give it to another place. The only 50% will do that. And they're not getting the money that they should. And this is, they've already won the battle. It's so frustrating to watch. And I know these people are working so hard at trying to do the right thing, but yet it's not possible because they're not going to be allowed to do the right thing. They're just going to waste their time, which is so sad. And that frustrates me. I mean, Justin Trudeau to not have something to be said by now is a very good indicator that they're going to stick with this. They're not going to change their belief systems or their stance on it, which, you know, is really very sad to me. I don't know. I guess I just am not very optimistic about the situation at all.
Yeah, see, I feel completely the opposite. Well, I am so encouraged. This is Canada's finest moment, you know, since Canada became independent. This is incredible. You know? I got Josie on the line, and she's going to have a lot to talk about this, too. So, Pianki, why don't you make a quick comment, and then we'll get to Josie.
Yeah,
I was going to say, why do you continue to use Facebook and Twitter? I divorced myself from Twitter when they divorced Donald Trump.
Yeah, well,
I still tweet out the show every day.
What do you do for income? I guess my question would be, what do you do for income?
I'm self-dependent.
What is your top? Excuse me?
I'm self-dependent. And that's another thing, you know, especially as someone who's black, if you are, they usually go after you because they figure you work for a school district or they figure you work for a government, which I was either. So I say what I want to say and do what I want to do. Well, the truckers is one entity. Where are the other entities? You got healthcare workers, you got hotel workers, you got restaurants. Where are the other entities that should be also combining with the truckers in Canada?
Well, you haven't answered my question, but I would just say this, that I work in travel and in social media. Both have been absolutely desecrated. I need to put food on the table, and I'm not as lucky as you to be self-dependent. So that's what I do, and that's why I haven't divorced them, as you say, because it's not that easy, because we have to live. Unless you're going to work for me and help me out, then I need to work for myself, and these are the platforms that I utilize for my businesses. So that's why I haven't divorced them, and that's why I'm not able to be so forthright on how my opinions are. And plus marketing, you really can't go one side or the other. You really have to be very neutral so that everybody loves what you're doing, so that they want to work with you. So you can stand on your pedestal and say you're self-dependent, which I find a very vague. I don't like those types of answers. But other people, like healthcare workers especially, and other people that are forced me and travel, we have to put food on the table, and we all aren't so lucky. So, you know, this idea that everybody's self-dependent, well, then if you guys are, then you should be working harder at changing, moving the needle. You should be in Canada right now helping them if you're self-dependent. It's so, I think really most people are like me, not like you, and they have to be dependent because we all work in a society that's very intertwined, and we have to play by the rules. But I would definitely give you time for rebuttal, but I have to go because I'm not self-dependent and I have to go work. So thank you so much for your time. I'm Shelby. You're fabulous.
All right.
Well,
thank you, Shelby.
I have contributed to those causes monetarily. I don't travel to Canada because it's too cold. I'm in my winter home down south. But what I'm saying is this. If you continue to contribute to that which turns around and works against you and stabs you in the face, it's like taking one step forward, two or three steps backward. Yep. It just don't get nowhere.
Hold on.
Absolutely.
Hey, Jesse's on the line, so let's play her theme.
Hey, good morning.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Coffey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Coffey. All right. So feel free to react to our Canadian conversation. But
good morning. Good morning.
There's no overlap with our reporting.
Hi, Josie.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
Hey, good morning, anyway. Bianchi, you're absolutely correct. You can send money. You don't have to be there present. Yes, you can be there, but that's up to you. Facebook, I believe Facebook is the one that owns GoFundMe. So Facebook is going to go down anyway. So we don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
We're all going to Trump's Truth Social. I mean, as soon as Truth Social opens up, I'm moving all my political stuff over there. Yeah.
And Facebook owns Messenger, and they're controlling all my messages right now. One of my friends called. She said, "Hey, my son is very sick with COVID, blah, blah, blah." She said, "Where do I get the meds, blah, blah, blah?" Because I guide people, frontline doctors, blah, 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 you know. And I tried and tried and tried to reach you and call, and my messages will not go through at all just because of the COVID message. It's crazy. And then I asked another friend, "Did you reach my friend?" Because I was trying to reach other people to reach to her. And she said, "I never got anything. Look at my phone." Yep. So I found out they're tracking me right now. Yeah. It's okay. They're all going to go down. I can hardly wait. But I'm excited. to see the truckers standing since the coward doctors, like I said in the last meeting we had, I'm so ashamed of the doctors and nurses that are not coming forward, or our leaders, conservatives, they're not coming forward at all. And it's very sad. They're allowing so many people to die, so many people to be behind the mask, and so many people being forced to get vaccinated or you lose your jobs. Very sad. And once you cave in, that's it. It's all over. And that's what's happening. But I wanted to talk this morning, Gabriel Boric. He's the new elected president from Chile. And my heart is sad because he's only 35 years old, radical communist to the max. He's going to be sworn in as a president from Chile in March. And let me tell you, I've been begging a lot of people, it's not too late not to do it, because he's a communist. The same exact thing is going to happen to Chile that happened to Venezuela. And the reason this young radical left criminal communist young man won is because they're doing exactly the same thing that Hugo Chavez did way back. And Venezuela used to be one of the richest country in the Latino Spanish culture, and not anymore. They're eating the pets. They have eaten all the animals in the zoo in Venezuela because people are starving, literally starving. And now with the regimen that we have in our country here, we're not helping those people at all. Where's the people calling and screaming about humanity? You don't hear that with Venezuela. So I went to bed sad listening to all this, that this guy is going to be sworn in March. My heart breaks because I lived through communists in Chile, September 11, 1973. Dead bodies everywhere. I mean, literally everywhere. That they start picking up the bodies and dumping them in the river right in the middle of the city in Santiago, Chile. A lot of the young men were shot in the head, in the back of the head, across the street from my home. They were getting them out of the dorms in the middle of the night. We were watching this whole thing. It was very, very sad. Thank God that we were part of the U.S. Embassy, working part of CIA, top secret, that we were able to get food and crackers and cereal, toilet paper at the American Embassy once a month. We used to travel, but a lot of times we pay the price. And in one of those travels that we were going, they had checkpoint everywhere. So they had a machine gun on my chest. And as a 15-year-old girl, I thought I was going to die. I started crying. And then they started laughing, if it was a joke. But to do that to a child, I'm 64 years old, and I can never forget that moment when they put the machine gun on my chest as a young girl to search me. These people are cruel. These people are evil. And that's what we have running our country right now, evil, evil, pure evil. And that's what I call Trudeau from Canada. He's evil and he needs to be removed as soon as possible. But
the procedure of that. Mm-hmm. Now Chile, so did you say that this was a Cuban born person that's in Chile, or I think earlier? So it's a Chilean.
Yeah.
Okay. Now Chile has an interesting history. I remember when I was in college, all the leftists were railing against Augusto Pinochet, saying he's the worst person on the face of the earth and all this other stuff. Then I hear later on that he actually did pretty well, but he still had, I mean, he had his problems. But what is the history of Chile? Have they ever had a you know, like a Trump, you know, or a Reagan equivalent? Have they ever had somebody that believed in, you know, Chile first, the people first, you know, or they've always had either, you know, one form of a dictator or another?
Well, you know, most of the Spanish presidents are corrupt, and we didn't believe that we had that in America too. But now we found out we have for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So we did not know. It's been hush, hush, hush for many years. But Pinochet, when he came in, he cleaned house.
Okay.
He got rid of all the communists, and he was not like Trump, because I lived through it. But he made the country rich. He made the country back to Chile the way it's supposed to be. And it's been like that ever since 1973. And now all the young kids brainwashed by communists. And the same thing is happening in the Ukraine with all the young kids, because when I travel to the Ukraine, all the young kids, they want communists back. I said, are you stupid? Why? Because you didn't live through it like your grandparents and your parents did.
Yeah.
So all the young kids are taking over Chile because this guy is 35 years old, and a lot of the leaders are college kids. A lot of the ones putting them in.
That's where it starts.
Pedestal.
That's Pol Pot was a college professor in Cambodia, and then ended up at the killing fields. It's very common for college leftist intellectual professors to lead a lot of this crap, and they take their nation right down the toilet. You know, it's horrible what happens in these places. So this is a pattern. We've seen this movie before. We know where this goes.
Oh,
yeah.
And it does not work. Their goal is to be in power and control, because this is what's happening to America. I see it. Since Obama got in office, I started preparing with my weapons, my ammunition. We got ammunition to help so many families, actually. And food. I've been buying Four Patriots food supplies since Obama got in office, because we knew what was coming.
We
just knew it because I lived through it, and I told my husband, I need to start preparing. It's going to come here. So this is what we have in our country. Obama, Susan Rice, China, Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, and Nancy Pelosi are the ones running our country. If people are too stupid and blind to see it, well, it's too bad. But that's exactly who's running our country. That's
well, they're waking
they're
up.
Destroying this country.
They're waking up.
Too
here's
slow.
Here's something
waking
that's.
Up too slow.
Well, I know that, but here's what's interesting. That Laura Avalese, when she was on calling from Toronto this morning, was talking about a trucker who's been on camera. And this is really, you know, I have nothing but faith in what's going on. I'm optimistic. You know, Shelby's discouraged. Yeah. Laura's discouraged. I said, wait a minute. You guys have already won. You don't realize just waking up is a victory. You know, so you got to take the victories where you can. They don't recognize victory yet because people are so in tune with absolute victory is the only way to victory. No, there's victories happening all the time. And this trucker said, you know, they're taking away our gasoline, they're taking away our meat, but they don't realize. He said, we're truckers. And I didn't hear this, but I'm just kind of like paraphrasing from what Laura was saying.
Yeah.
He says, we get trapped in snowstorms for days. He said, we're Canadian truckers. We're driving hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles all by ourselves. If you think that a little bit of gasoline stolen or some money stolen is going to stop us, you don't know who you're dealing with. And this is why I think truckers are so good for this kind of rally. And I asked if the bikers are going to come out, you know, when the weather improves. And of course, the bikers are going to go too. Now, I know the same folks I know with Northern Florida, you know, Bikers for Trump. So I'll be talking to them about what's going on. And we need a connection. But here's a problem I'm having. The problem I'm having is I have not been able to connect with the leaders, you know, in Canada about this, because citizen legislation is so new to everybody. They didn't know about the concept yet. So I'm running into a roadblock. So I'm hoping to make some connections there. We had Jen Clark is going to join us Thursday from Australia. Couldn't get through because it's a Skype issues. I got to figure out how to. I need to write up a little. You know, here's how you use our Skype account kind of thing. Anthony Williams in New Zealand figured it out, but he's a tech guy, so he knows that kind of stuff. So I'm going to get him to write out something really simple. So because I've never used it, I just take the calls when they come in. I know how that works, and I set that all up. But with a guy in London for like 4 hours, we sat here wrestling with him. But what is it about? There's two things I want to know. The big question overall is freedom illegal? Have the governments of Canada, the United States, Australia, and these other places, are they so wrapped up in power that to them, freedom really should be illegal? That's what I'm asking.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what they're doing. And I'm surprised Trudeau, the criminal, hasn't sent the military to attack the truckers. But he has sent the police. And the police right now, they're stopping people from, like, going to their doctor's appointment and all that, and they're blaming the truckers, the police.
Well, not all the police.
But
apparently,
the
Laura,
truckers are not doing nothing.
Yeah, but Laura told us that half, the 50% of the Ottawa police have resigned already over this.
Good.
That's huge.
Good.
Yeah.
That's
so the ones that are left are the, you know, the good fascists who are just following orders and believe in the power of the state and or they want their security and their job or something. But for whatever reason, you've got those that are economically bound to this, and the, which I yeah. understand, but it's still unacceptable. But then you've got the ones who are philosophically and politically bound to this because they think that absolute government power is the way to go. Those are the scary people. Those are the ones that should have been kicked out. They need to, we don't need to defund the police. We need to de-totalitarianize. I'll think of a better word, but in other words, we need to take the just following order totalitarians out of the police. That would be a good thing to do.
Exactly.
Jackie, you want to get on this, right?
The police and the military, the military in all the countries, they need to be against their leaders because mm-hmm. they're forcing them like if they were animals to take the vaccine, to put the mask
right.
on, and to be locked up at home in Australia and other countries. And you know, the police and the military, they know better, but so many of them are corrupt and they're getting lots of money, like a lot of our doctors in our hospitals mm-hmm. and CEO. But the CEO from West Florida, she already resigned, or he already resigned, I forgot if it's he or she. Mm-hmm. And the new one coming in, they're saying that they think she's going to resign already. So they know. A lot of these people know that they're going to be arrested. That's why a lot of the Democrat senators are stepping down, thinking that they're going to get away with their crime. But some of the Democrats right now, they're not liking about the EMP attacks that they want to do to our people because they want our people to freeze to death up north, carry even their family member, they're going to die, as long as they have power and control. And that's what's happening in Chile. I believe in Chile, this mm-hmm. young man with all the radical left, they have stolen this election because people don't want communists. The older folks that lived through it, like I did, we don't want to vote for the same garbage again. We know how it was. And this 35-year-old Gabriel, he's very connected with the president from Mexico and from mm-hmm. Maduro, Venezuela, and Castro. They're all working together. And I
believe that's what you're saying earlier.
Did exactly
yeah.
the same thing to steal this election. So it's just very sad. So I can hardly wait for President Trump to return and clean this mess. He's working behind closed door. About 80% of the work we don't know about, but he's working very hard. And I know a few things about it already. And,
well, some of the things we do know about, you know, the Finchon in Arizona has already introduced the resolution to decertify Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just yeah. Pennsylvania already ruled the mail-in. But that's what we came out in our press release. You know, the mail-in ballots,
yeah.
you know, in Pennsylvania have already disqualified Brandon. So we're
see,
very
Greg,
I think we're yeah.
Yeah. But you
go
see,
ahead.
Greg, what's happening is, and a lot of Americans, a lot of people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very involved in this. A lot of people don't know that our president Trump and the intelligence military, they already have in their hand, like I told you before, 100 mm-hmm. evidence of all the fraud as far as 2004, and that's what we were told at these
mm-hmm.
meetings that we had. And so what they're doing is they're allowing all these radical cities to be investigated and all that to give them more time. That's exactly what's happening. But they already know everything. And I believe Space Force was being used for all this. So they know. They got
well, Facebook contributed money. So
their hands.
They have to stop the money from Facebook. They have to stop all these private contributions. They have to start regulating, you know, the corruption. Now,
mm-hmm.
it worked in Virginia. So Virginia is kind of the model right now. They had tons of observers. You know, they got rid of the mail order stuff. They actually changed the laws to you know, get somewhat fair elections. My contention is always, you know, count where cast. Wherever the ballot is cast, that's what has to be counted. You cannot transport ballots. You know, so you can
mm-hmm.
you can distribute them to voting places, you know, and they're at the polls, but you know, counted were cast, and that and then the reporter at the precinct level, and that's the best way to do it with paper ballots that can be checked later, you know. So there's a huge thing, but I'm impatient though because I want to see that first vote decertifying Brandon. I want that first state to start doing this because they don't have a lot of time. They've got 22 months to get the process. Well, I guess they've already started in some of these places, but I'm not sure, you know, which ones are holding the clock, so to speak. So the sooner they decertify, and don't wait for the attorney general in Arizona for prosecutions. That's a totally separate thing. They need to decertify
mm-hmm.
now. Wisconsin needs to decertify now. Pennsylvania needs to decertify now. That would not overturn the election, but correct it. Pianchi.
That's where it lies the power problem. These people got the information that they need, apparently. I don't know for sure. Then why don't they move on it?
Because they're geldings.
They will move on it.
But they need to move now. You know, the election's in November. They need to get this corrected before then. Well, here's the thing, too. And
no,
I do the show on this.
There's not going to be no election in November because we're going to have to fix the one we had in 2020. Nothing should move forward until we fix
the 2020
election.
Oh, I agree with you. They've got a schedule. There's going to be a vote. You know, whether the vote is properly, you know, enforced as fair or not, it's another question. Let me ask the question I asked yesterday. And this is something, you know, you guys didn't get a chance. Mondays are kind of weird anyway. But the question I asked yesterday is, given the fact that the Republicans now have a majority in the Senate, and I spent the first hour talking about this first thing yesterday morning, the Republicans have a majority in the Senate, which means they own the committee chairs. They own the Senate. You know, you can't count Kamala Harris, as a vote in the Senate. Well, you can't count the vice president's vote because she's obviously not vice president any more than Brandon is president. But the point is that you can't count that towards the majority. There's a 50-49 vote. In fact, the Republicans, if they really had, any balls at all, they would have made a rule that independents are independent. They can't be counted in another party. So you'd have two. You'd have Bernie Sanders and Angus King are independents. The Democrats have 47 votes. There are two independents, which makes 49, which shouldn't be counted. But the Republicans have the majority right now. They're 50 Republican senators. So why hasn't Mitch McConnell immediately moved in and said, okay, we're in charge, you know, shove over Schumann, you know, sign move over and appointed Republican committee chairs to all the committees? He could do that right now, but he's not because he's a gelding, because they don't want power. And if they're not willing to do something now before the November election to use the majority that they now have, why would you believe for a second they're going to use a majority, even, you know, if they get one after the November midterm election? I don't think they're going to. I think they're geldings. They're incapable of acting now. They like being losers. They're happiest being losers to the Democrats.
Mitch McConnell is one of them with his wife. They're a bunch of crooks.
Okay.
They're all going to be arrested.
So why isn't Ted Cruz
all of these
majority
people.
Leader? You know, I mean, who in the Senate would be Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Tom Cotton? I can think of a bunch of people who'd be great majority leaders of the geldings. But right now, but Mitch McConnell's like the worst. The only good thing he does is judicial appointments. He's been pretty good about that. But the Republicans have a majority that they're not using. They've had it for like 5 days now. Well, what's the problem? Who wants that?
The thing is,
go ahead.
Well, the thing is this, and like Josie was talking about the Chile and Venezuela, those people really don't have no power. For one reason, they gave up all their weapons, their guns. But the United States, you have people who have that option, should I say that protection, but they don't move, like in Ottawa. They should also be a movement to get rid of those politicians that's working against them. This is not no one step. Then stop and let's go back to dancing. No, this is something that has to be continually going on. Because if you let these people exist, like Zuckerberg fold up today and there's no more Facebook. Well, not only do you reject him today, but you're going to have to reject him tomorrow and the day after and the day after. Forever reject him because he's the same person.
Well, see, this is why we're splitting into two worlds here, you know, left and right, conservative and liberal. You know, we have conservative social media and we're going to have liberal social. Well, we've got liberal social media. We're going to have conservative social media. We're going to have, you know, I think I see this split going through the whole country. I mean, this is every bit the split of the Civil War, except we're not shooting each other, which is good. But the point being that we have a huge split. We are a segregated nation ideologically at this point, and we're setting up separate entities for almost everything. Remember the movie Red Dawn? You know, you had Free America and Communist America, you know, that was occupied. Well, they're not doing it with tanks and guns. They're doing it with electronics. The computers have taken away the necessity to enforce government policy with guns. They can just enforce it with computers, which is better because we're not killing people, but it's worse in terms of freedom. It's faster to take it away. Anything that can be put on the internet can be taken away. But there was one thing that was that I wanted to bring up. Remember Occupy Wall Street? Remember back when all the leftists were camping out in cities for months? Okay.
Well organized.
It was well organized. Now, I can't think of a single instance where they had their power cut, their gasoline cut, their food taken, their tents taken away.
Nope.
I remember them in San Francisco. I had to be quiet on my city tours. I drove a motorized cable car, right? This is before I got this gig. But while I was driving around San Francisco, I actually shut down because I didn't want a bunch of leftists storming my cable car, which was open. I mean, you could just leap right on it, right? And so so I was very quiet around the Occupy folks just because I didn't want a bunch of raving leftists that the police would favor, more than likely being San Francisco, you know, coming and attacking my passengers who are from all over the country, all over the world, actually. And so, yeah, but I remember months. They were there for months. And yet, you know, how come, where's the comparison to Occupy Wall Street? I haven't heard that yet. I'm going to post an article.
Nobody has seen them before, Greg.
Nobody's seen what?
Why the evil that we can identify with names and businesses and movements, why they never seen anything like that before, so they had to see what's up with these people.
They had the protests. Remember when the leftists used to protest the globalist World Economic Forum and the big meetings, mm-hmm. the G20 and things like that? Well, now they are. Now the leftists are the G20. So, you know, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, but how many common people? See, it's one thing to get some specific and specialized people involved in, but you can't do it with just them. You got to move down into what we call the common general population. And you have to educate them, or hopefully they begin to wonder and become curious in what it is you're doing. So the Occupy movements, really, they just look like they're a bunch of homeless people that put tents up in different locations.
But they were trying to close down Wall Street. I mean, Occupy Wall Street, and they were trying to close down the cities. I got to hold you up just for a second. We've got congressional candidate Chief Jerome Bells on the line right now. So I'm going to give him a round of applause.
Okay.
We're going to bring him on, and of course, you know, Josie and Bianchi, you're welcome to stick around. Chief Bell only has about 30 or 40 minutes, so we're going to squeeze in our questions as much as we can. Chief, welcome back to the show, sir. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good. Good morning. Good morning to your other guests too. I'm fine. How you doing?
Oh, I'm having a great time. We had Laura from Canada checking in. We had our cruise and travel report. We've got Josie, who's still here with the Latino report. We got Bianchi, who's regular caller, citizen, legislator. We're going great guns. It's a busy, busy Tuesday. But since you have limited time, I'm going to let you start. What's most important to you? What do you want to talk about with the campaign and issues or politics, or what's on your mind, sir? And then I've got like 3 hours worth of questions for you. So I'll let you start.
Yeah, okay, we can bring it on. But I think the most important thing right now to me is the invasion on our southern border. You know,
okay.
With this invasion, all of the states in the United States have become border states because of the illegal trafficking, human trafficking that they're doing, you know, busing these illegals into the heartland of America, into our different states, flying them in the dark of night.
Yeah,
you know, so that's really the biggest thing I think that's affecting the United States, right? Well, that will be affecting the United States here over the next few years. And we're in Ukraine. We have Biden. We're talking about going into Ukraine to once again protect another country's borders when our borders are
a little bit of irony there.
Wide open, and we're actually literally being invaded, and we're acting like a big travel agency right now for the cartel.
Well, for Congress, here's something that I talked about yesterday morning, I say for an hour, and I was mentioning this just a few minutes ago. The Republicans currently have a majority in the Senate of 50-49, which means that Kamala Harris doesn't get a vote because there isn't a tie. You know, you're never going to have a tie, you know, by party unless there is a tie vote. But the point is they have a majority and they're not using it. You know, would this be the time to come out with a press release or a press conference or some, you know, some public statement saying, look, you GOP geldings, you've got a majority right now. Why don't you pass a resolution to not have a single soldier go to Ukraine or a single dollar spent on Ukraine until our southern border is sealed and secure? What do you think?
Well, I think the problem with that is that, yeah, we may have a majority, but we also have rhinos and we have traitors that are sitting in the Senate. I mean, you still have Mitt Romney up there, you know, and those types who probably won't vote for that. You have these senators that are beholden, these neocons that have stock into these war companies. So they would never vote for that. You have, you know, the Lindsey Grahams of the world. So you have these people that are sitting up there that mm-hmm. want to feign and pretend like they're for America, and they're really not. So I don't even think that resolution would pass, even though we have the majority.
It doesn't have to pass. It doesn't have to pass. It has to be proposed, though. It, you know, and this is the thing, too. People say, you know, people ask me, well, how many bills have you got passed at Action Radio? Well, none yet, but that's not the point. We start with the people, then we go to the media, then we go to the legislature. It's a process. So if you start introducing the idea, then people might start asking in their heads, and they might start asking their folks on social media and their campaigns, well, how come you're not sponsoring it? Why are you sending troops to Ukraine when they should be at the southern border? So you plant the idea, and then the idea grows, and more people get involved with it, and they bring that about. But you mentioned the neocons. I want to talk about that because just to let folks know, Congressional candidate Jerome Bell and I were talking off the air a little bit about the F-35, and Pianki's here, and he's a pilot too. So you got two pilots, you know, we got a Navy chief, and so this to me is like the perfect metaphor for the absurdity of Washington in terms of neocons spending. The neocons want a war somewhere, or they're not happy. The military contractors want to have money spent on them, or they're not happy. You know, they want to develop something to give to the soldiers and the sailors and the airmen to fight with, you know, otherwise they can't fight. And they've come up with this huge turkey that, like I say, is the perfect metaphor for everything that's wrong with Washington and military policy, and that is the F-35. And so I'd be curious, I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at that video, but, you know, you may be, hopefully you'll be in a position in Congress to vote on appropriations for this thing. What do you think of it?
You know, well, you know, I honestly think that and the F-22 has okay. been a big waste of money because we have these big issues, you know. But I would say we definitely need the best war fighting machines that we can to maintain the security of the United States. Mm-hmm. Now, with the F-35, I believe it does too much. It's too heavy. I believe that, and I did okay. see that video. I actually served on the USS Carl Vinson, so that actually came close
oh,
to home. Actually.
Wow.
I actually worked on that flight deck and I launched off of that flight deck and launched planes off that flight deck. So it really brings that close to home that happened to a U.S. aircraft carrier that I actually served on. You know, but I think as far as planes go, and I'm not a pilot. You know, I did fly on fixed wing aircraft, but I'm not a pilot.
We can learn.
But
not too late.
You know, as far
I got
as
a book on
fighters,
it.
Oh, I love to fly now.
We'll
I mean,
get
no,
you flying.
I've flown solo in a Cessna 172, and I did my solo flights and things like that. But
okay.
you know, I never
you're
finished
anyway.
Get my pilot license. But you know, I've flown enough though. I have over 9,000 flight hours in the planes. But you know, I think our warfighters need to really be able to do one thing. You know, and it would make the planes lighter and more agile, and you know, I think better suited to what they do. I think with the F-35, it does too much, and you know, I think they want to try to save money, but I think one of those things of what $95 million or something like that. You know,
no, it's more than that. It's like 100 to 200 million a copy by the time they're done with it. Yeah, well, that's what Canada's. You know, they're looking at. They might have to spend for it, but I want to get Pianki and I want to get Josie on this too, so you guys can ask questions as well. But just in terms of spending, of the priorities, of the attitude that we're going to have this ridiculous airplane. I don't know if you're remember the F-111 that was in the 70s. It was General Dynamics, and it was a Robert McNamara. It was a previous attempt to make one plane do everything. It didn't work then, and it's not working now. And the stupidity of repeating the exact same mistake over again. So people don't have to know exactly what the problems with the F-35 are. I'll tell you right now, it's underpowered, overweight, too fat, can't turn, can't do anything right, and it's a useless airplane. You try to do everything, and you know, how many boat car combinations work? They don't, because a boat works best as a boat, and a car works best as a car. You combine them, you're going to have problems, you know, in the same way. That's the metaphor for the F-35. But look at the mentality, though. They're still spending money on this. They're still buying it. They're still pushing it, even though all this information is out there. So how do you combat the attitude that, well, once we started a program, we have to keep it going? And that could apply to any program in Washington. How do you deal with that?
I mean, we deal with it on the case of fraud, waste, and abuse. And, you know, when you look at it as taxpayer money, because what happens when these people go to Washington and they get lobbied to pass these bills and to build these airplanes, they forget about the taxpayer. They forget about that this is the taxpayer money, and we have to stop wasting taxpayer money. How is this going to affect our citizens and Americans that's actually paying for this, you know, monstrosity of a failure of an airplane? You know, so I would definitely legislate and go by that way because I'm a constitutionalist. I believe that the government is way too big, and I honestly believe that if there's any taxpayer money that can be saved, it should be saved. When I was on the ATMA staff before I retired, there was money always left over. You know, we have this thing in the military, use it or lose it, right? Use it or lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have money at the end of the year, they want us to spend all of this money up so we'll get the same, if not more, next year. Because if we come in under and we don't use our money, then, okay, we're going to get less. Okay, so let's return that money back to the taxpayer would be mm-hmm. my attitude. And that was my attitude. So, you know, I got in not any trouble, but I had some discussions with my captain about it before I retired. And we had some training money that stayed left over because I was in the training department. I was the pilot and crew training program manager for the entire Navy Reserve. So we had some money left over, and I wanted to give it back. But, you know, and he decided to actually turn it in and give it back, which was actually astonishing to me that an officer actually did that. But he was on board with what we were saying. He didn't believe in wasting taxpayer money, and I think that's the way it should be with the government.
Yeah, there's your first bill. You know, I would write up something, or we can work on that together, you know, to have a some kind of an incentive program where people are rewarded for saving money. You know, right now they're rewarded for spending money with more money. Okay, that's crazy. That's like rewarding people who max out their credit cards with higher limits. That's how we got in the national debt problem. So there's got to be a way.
I mean, yeah,
to,
that's what we do with the. That's
yeah,
what we
ahead.
Do in Congress now. We just keep raising the. Raising the debt limit and keep overspending the credit card. I mean, but it's easy to do that when it's not your money.
Oh, no, I got one more point to make, and I want to open it up to Bianchi and Josie in a second. But I want one more thing. You're talking about the border, and one thing we've done here. I'm gonna email you with bills that we have here at Action Radio that match up with your program. I've got your agenda right here in front of me, and so I'll be able to send you match up some bills and see if you like those. And those are things you might want to campaign on. But we've discovered something that civil asset forfeiture is the best way to handle illegal aliens at the local and the state level. Because it doesn't involve immigration, doesn't involve federal law, doesn't involve ICE, doesn't involve rounding people up, doesn't involve anything like that, but you basically seize their assets. And you could do this through the IRS, you could do it through the ITIN number, the individual tax identification number, which basically is given to illegal aliens so the IRS can collect tax money from people that shouldn't be here and gives the illusion they can buy their way into permanent residency because they're paying taxes. So if you want to do something, if you want to focus on something that has really never been explored, it was for drug dealers, but civil asset forfeiture. Take not only the property of illegal aliens, but the companies that are employing them. You start doing that, and you will see a lot of people leaving this country who shouldn't be here. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I definitely can agree with that, and we can definitely explore that as a bill. Maybe you can come to Congress with me and be my bill writer.
Well, I already am your bill writer. You know, I mean, this is what Action Radio is for.
But there you go.
You know, this is why I created it, so that us regular folks out here could reach you lofty people in Congress and say, here's how we consent to be governed. That's the whole point of Action Radio. Let's go to Bianchi and then Josie. Bianchi, do you have a question for our congressional candidate, Chief Jerome Bell? Bianchi?
Well, make sure you get a copy of my ballot bill, too.
Well, tell him.
Where you have separate ballot. On Election Day in November, you have a person walk in the poll. Those who have been vetted properly can vote on the federal ballot for president, vice president, U.S. senator, and congressperson. And those ballots are counted there at the poll. When they get done voting for the federal ballot, then they can go vote for state and local. And they can, however the state and local wants to vet them, let it be. I think that's one of the big problems. You're trying to get 50 states to march to the same beat. And it just ain't going to happen. But the Constitution allows you to set the rules, regulations, the vetting process for that federal ballot. Let's do it.
Yeah, Chief, separate ballots for a federal and state election. What do you think? You don't have to have a full answer now. I mean, you can think about it, but just as a concept, as an idea, something to work with. The bill's already written.
Oh, well, it just depends on how many days you want to take, okay, because that could take up a lot of time. And, you know, I would like to see a federal holiday. Well, not a federal holiday, a federal holiday for election, I should say. I think Election Day should be a holiday. And then that may be feasible, you know, because one of the things is the time. So why not? You know, because voting in America is one of the most sacred things, one of the most valid things as citizens that we can do. So why not make that a holiday? And so people won't complain, well, we don't have time to vote, you know, the polls close. Hey, you get there, you know, at 6 a.m. and the polls stay open at 7 p.m. I think that's plenty enough time for you to get there and vote. And with some early voting, not the 45-day thing, you know, but maybe a week or two of early voting, you go down there and you do your duty as a citizen and vote. You know, so whether if it's on separate ballots or separate days, you know.
No, it's not separate days. We're just talking about, but in other words, you vote. It's still the same process. The only thing that's separate are the ballots themselves. So you have a federal ballot and you have a state ballot, but it's the same at the poll. It's the same everything else. That's what Pianki's talking about. I thought that might have been a little bit of confusion. We're not talking about separate elections. Pianki, do you want to explain further? Then I know Joseph.
Yeah, it's the same day. When you go into a polling place, the Constitution, Article 2, I believe it is, lets the Congress set the rules and regulations for the federal ballot. You can't tell states how to, you know, like in Missouri. In Missouri, voters are paid to go vote. You have to have 3 hours before the polls close. So if you normally get off at 4:30, they let you off at 4 o'clock, and you get paid for it. So you're not going to change that. You're going to try to change that, Missourians will be ready to go to have a war. But the federal ballot can be vetted. You can use the identification process, which can include fingerprints. You can have an iris and your eyes identification. The vetting should be like the U.S. passport to make that sure that you're legal. Now, what the states do, actually the federal government can't tell the states much of anything. If you want to have a day off, the federal government can't tell the states to have a day off. The Constitution gives that autonomy to the states to do whatever they want to do. That's why they're bringing these people in, young man, because they can be counted toward apportionment. When it comes down to creating another congressional district, it's based on population. Well, if you put a lot of illegals in a given area, they can be counted toward another congressional seat. Now, they're not supposed to vote, but we know, looking at New York and looking at a couple other cities, they allow illegals to vote in local elections, which, according to the Constitution, they can do that.
Chief?
I mean, well, what it is with the Constitution, each state comes up with their own laws. The state legislators and legislations, they come up with their own legislation as far as voting go. That's down to the states. The Constitution can't override the states as far as their election laws. Now, I definitely agree with you what they're doing with the bringing in the illegals and the refugee programs. They're putting them into these certain states to try to sway elections. And also, I believe that we should have a voter ID. Everyone has an ID for everything. No one does not have. If you show me one person without an ID, then I'll show you one person that probably don't belong here. But everyone has an ID. So as far as the vetting goes, the vetting will be simple. You just have to have a valid state ID in your state to be able to vote. If you don't have a valid state ID, then you can't vote. But the problem is that these Democrats and the people that want to steal elections, they don't want voting ID. Why? Because they can't steal elections. And like you say, in New York, they have illegals that can vote in local elections. That's illegal. That should not happen. That's on the state of New York. That's on the mayor. And so the people should be rebelling against that. And I don't think the federal government has a say over the states, because Article 10 gives the power back to the states. Does not govern or say it in the Constitution. It's proportioned back down to the states. So, I don't think the federal government should get involved with elections on a statewide level and to the states, because that's not the federal government's job.
Yeah.
That's why you need to have a separate ballot.
Hold on, Pianki. Because I got limited time.
Because he's a little still confused, I think, on this. If you got a state ballot and local ballot that's got Joe Biden or got Donald Trump and whoever on that ballot, that illegal is going to go right up and start putting dots and dashes and marks for those candidates, because it's on one ballot. So you got to separate those ballots. Go ahead, y'all.
Jesse?
I agree 100%. Everyone should have an ID, and I wrote a bill, fingerprint ID, because if Mickey Mouse and our military can do fingerprint ID, everyone should have a voting card, or if it's in your license or whatever, with your fingerprint. because a lot of these illegals, they're not doing the fingerprints. A lot of the illegals right now are buying Social Security in order to work legally because they want to get benefits. So I agree 100%. We did not know about this corruption of this voting fraud way back. The Democrats been doing it for years and years and years, and they've been getting away, and they've been getting away, and that's the problem. We had a problem, and we didn't think we did. And thank God, because of Donald Trump, now we know the truth.
Yeah, and Jesse's fingerprint would be
prosecuted.
And Jesse's bill would have fingerprint scanning. You'd actually have a scanner at the polling places. That's what's included in that bill. I want to make that point. Chief, go ahead. Yeah, you had a response?
Yeah, with that, and I also think we need to go back to paper ballots, so we need to get away from the electronics because the electronics can be hacked and changed, and because we've seen that they can be added, votes can be added, and there's not one vote for one person, right? Because with the way that they do these algorithms now, mm-hmm. with these computer systems, you get 1.67 votes if you vote for Biden, and you get 1.24 votes if you vote for Trump. I mean, what is that? That's not one man, one vote. So we need to go back to one man, one vote. We need to go back to paper ballots, count the ballots. That night. I mean, it's worked for years. I mean, this last election was the worst election ever, to where they stopped elections, they stopped counting, then they started back counting. I mean, for decades, ever since this country has been here, we've always been able to find out who the president of the United States was on the night of, and, you know, maybe late in the morning, you know, because of the people, but we've never had to go weeks. We never had to go months, you know, to determine an election. You know, this is preposterous. And so I think we just need to go back to counting the paper ballots and coming with the conclusion that night. And it's very, very easy and feasible to do.
Yeah. We don't even say President Biden on this show. We always call him, you know, I call him, you know, the Brandon insurrection. Jesse, quick point, then I want to change issues. I want to cover this before we have Chief Bell. Go ahead, Jesse.
May I suggest our military outside our country, they need to vote in the military base, and the military leaders should be sending their votes through the U.S. Embassy, not through the mail, because they're crooks. And that should be done like that. That way their votes will count correctly. And
yeah, counted where cast.
All of you.
Counted where cast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
You know, and that's a great idea because I remember, you know, actually, I mentioned I was on the Carl Vinson. I remember we had absentee ballots on the Vinson, and we had to fly them off, right? Well, unfortunately, these ballots go into a big mail bag and they sit on an elevator to get loaded onto an airplane. Well, one day we were in pretty rough seas, but they were moving the mail to the plane that was taking the mail off, and these mail that these bags had all of the ship's absentee ballots on it. Well, they got washed overboard.
Washed overboard.
So none of us was able to vote. None of our absentee ballots even counted. So, you know,
that sounds
convenient. I definitely agree. If there's a way, if there's a way that we can vote on bases or maybe on ships, you know, and that nation, then yeah, I definitely agree with that, Josie. That would be a great idea because, you know, these mail-in ballots, and they get stolen. I mean, even at the post office, you know, you had concerns with the post office and with the election in 2020 that these ballots were just getting dumped, and they were.
Yeah.
And they were because they have these special codes on it. See, a lot of people don't know. They have these ballots have special codes on in these regions. So they can actually tell if it's a Democrat ballot or a Republican ballot sealed. Mm-hmm. And so they know
they're
getting rid of all the Republican ballots. So
They found so military votes in ditches everywhere. They had a party. And we cannot continue this illegally. Fraud leaders doing this in the post office. The post office, they should have been shut down a long time ago.
Well, you got to get mail.
Yeah, I'm actually calling for a 50-state audit and definitely a audit in Virginia, you know, from the 2020, because we definitely have to find out what happened in 2020.
question we have too is what's
going
on with
Counterware Cast is a good thing too.
Counterware Cast, I want to make a bill on Counterware Cast. You know, but the question on the audits, why isn't the GOP behind, you know, the audits in Arizona and in Wisconsin, that what's going on, and the fact that we came out with a press release, which I'm pretty sure I sent you, that we've called Trump the winner in Pennsylvania because the court overturned all the mail-in ballots. So the Republicans are not even interested in their own, you know, most likely party nominee in 2012. And I don't know how, you know, you're running as a Republican. This is why I'm asking these questions. But you know, where is the Republican Party when it terms even to check on the audits or to fund them or do something? They're not doing anything.
Well, unfortunately, that's a good question. Where are they? You know, I think there's a lot of Republicans that did not want President Trump to be president in 2020 because he was hitting them in their pockets. See, a lot of people don't understand that we have, I would say, domestic enemies on both sides of the aisle, in the Democratic Party, Democrat Party, and the Republican Party. So I think a bunch of these individuals, these warmongers, these neocons, the people that have these stocks in these companies, the people that may be involved in the human trafficking on the border, because they are the drug trafficking, you know. So I think with what President Trump did with shutting down the borders and making these laws on human trafficking, a lot of these politicians, they got hit in the pockets, you know, and I'm just going to be honest. You know, they may be involved, and allegedly, you know, I think that some of them might be involved. And so, you know, they don't want President Trump to come back. So maybe that's not why they're speaking out. I don't know. I can't speak for them. But you would think that they would be fighting a bigger fight if they wanted President Trump to be president in 2024.
One would think. Well, that's the thing. It's business as usual and power versus, you know, doing what's right. So I got a couple of questions. I want to ask you about you've got forgotten communities here on your agenda. But since we're on this topic of you know, what, the, not wanting Trump in, January 6th. We've done a lot of shows on January 6th. Josie was there January 6th. Jonathan Mosley, our legal reporter and attorney, who's defending a couple of folks in the D.C. gulag right now, you know, as what's going on. That the first question is why that jail is allowed to exist. The D.C. jail. But what I really want to know, we have a theory here that something, you know, while all the Trump supporters are walking around up top in the Capitol building, that's not the story. The real story was going on under, where all the people in, all the members of Congress were meeting. We don't know what happened, but there's 7 hours that is unaccounted for, you know, between the House and the Senate. Is there any way or anybody you know, anybody that we could talk to who was a member or was underground during the time of the January 6th, what I call the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In, so we know what happened during that congressional, basically 7 hours that's not in the record, it's completely blocked out. Do you have any idea what happened during that time?
I honestly can't say that I do. I would love to find out like you, but no, I don't even know who I was there, so no, I don't.
Well, it's all the members of Congress and the who are, you know, the members of Congress January 6th, you know, 2020, whoever's in session, you know, before the new Congress was seated, they were there. And so I don't know. I think it's worth an investigation. You can do something about this January 6th committee. You know, the, basically the cover up, the Democrat deep state cover up of what really happened.
I think this definitely fraud involved in that. It's a committee to cover up crimes. And it's just another witch hunt. You know, January 6th was not an insurrection. If anyone says it was an insurrection, they don't know what insurrections are. Mm-hmm. Because if that there were over a million, I hear sometimes 2 million people there. If those 2 million people really wanted to take over D.C., there was nothing that anyone could do about it, and they would have, you know, taken over that house if they wanted to. But it was really peaceful. You know, the ones that did, you know, walk into, though, they were peaceful. But the ones that caused the ruckus, and I mean, those were infiltrators, and, you know, and it's coming out now that, you know, they were FBI, they were Antifa, there were a bunch of people there making trouble and disguising themselves as Trump supporters, and you see the ones like the BLM, like the John Sullivans of the world, none of them are in jail, and you have them on film inside the Capitol. Why aren't they in jail? None of them are in jail. Only Trump supporters are in jail. They're rotting in jail. And you know, I would like to see more Republican congressmen and senators fight for those people that are sitting in that D.C. jail for no reason. They haven't been charged with a crime. And if they have been charged with the crime, it's trespassing. And but they've been in jail for over a year for trespassing. You got to be kidding me.
Well, is there any action in Congress? Are you calling for, or do you have bills or resolutions to deal with that? Either defund this January 6th committee, abolish this committee, get these folks out of jail. You know, what kind of advocacy can you bring to this? You're not in Congress yet. You're campaigning for Congress, but is there anything you can bring to this now? Some concrete action that you can encourage, you know, the people in Congress to take, or you can take, or even the candidates. Maybe you guys could, you know, like band together across the country with other candidates and have like a candidate committee saying we're calling for the GOP to do this. I don't think that's ever been done before. But maybe the candidates should be united. Just a thought. What do you want to do with that committee?
I mean, well, I have. Well, officially, we have my campaign has come out against the 1-6 committee. We've asked for the representative that represents the 2nd District right now, Lane Lawyers, to step down from the 1-6 committee. We've asked our fellow candidates that are running with me in the 2nd District to come out against the 1-6 committee, and but none of them have. I'm the only one that has. So you have these candidates that claim that they're America first and that claim that they love America, but they've been very, very silent on 1-6. I'm the only candidate in the 2nd District that has voiced the opinion about 1-6. So as far as getting candidates nationwide to come on board, they're scared. They're scared that they'll be seen as a insurrectionist or lover of insurrection or whatever. You know, but these are American citizens that are sitting in the jail as political prisoners. We don't do that in the United States. And so I'm definitely still fighting to get those prisoners released. I'm voicing my opinion as much as I can as a candidate to end this 1-6 committee. And so and so that's one reason I'm running, to be able to represent the people the right way and not the wrong way.
Yeah, no, you're doing a lot of things.
Can I
say, let's go around the panel again, Josie, and then Pianki. Josie,
can I say it is very sad to have political prisoners in America with our own American people. They don't even do that to the radical left terrorists, you know, and they're doing it to our innocent people. And all these people, they didn't do nothing wrong besides just marching like I was, you know. And our leaders are not doing anything to get them out, and I'm very disappointed with a lot of the conservative leaders. Matt Gaetz should have been on it. All this Ted Cruz, I mean, nobody's doing nothing. These people are not getting a chance to go home, and then until guilty, they have to prove that they are guilty or not, and they're not guilty. A lot of these people inside the Capitol were Antifa, Black Lives Matter, well organized, because by the time we arrived there, they were there already. So this is exactly their game they're playing, and nobody's doing nothing. And I'm very disappointed as a Christian, legal Latina that I am, and love
Chief?
America.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree 100% with you, Jesse.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we've got tapes of people who are there. In fact, Josie and Jonathan Mosley, who you know, like I said, those are our legal reports. They were there January 6th. You can go back and check the January 6th show, check our anniversary show. We've got eyewitness reports calling in, you know, and Jonathan's defending a couple of folks. In fact, we have one of the Proud Boys on, the number 2 in Philadelphia.
Right.
And I think the number 1 is the person, I've forgotten their name. I think, no, anyway, I don't want to misstate it. But they're still there. You know, it's pretty crazy. Let's get to Pianki. Then I got a couple questions on forgotten communities. And Antifa's barbarism must end. And I'm curious why Black Lives Matter isn't tossed in, because I always sort of relate those groups as left groups, you know, kind of put them in the same category. We'll get that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Pianki, do you have a comment for a question for Chief Bell?
Well, you got 2 more issues. Of course, I'm in favor of stronger border protection. We wrote a bill on that. But also, you know, I'm African-American, black. We need school
choice.
Oh, charges.
Now you tell me. You've been on this all the time, you never told me? No, I'm teasing you. Go ahead.
Yeah, we need to have school choice. Blacks, when poll and survey overwhelmingly have been for years saying they want school choice. And if you're concerned about the poor, vouchers to go along with it for everyone. That's what should be. And also, that needs to be a bill that protect black conservatives, because we get attacked, we get spit on, we get called all sorts of names like traitors, and insurrectionists, we need to have maybe one thing about having a bill for black conservatives, because you know yourself, you're not asked to come in and sit down at the table for the peach cobbler. Thank you.
Now, those are two great points. I want to focus on both of those in just a second, but Chief Bell, I want your response. School choice and black conservatives, yeah, and then I got a follow-up for you. Chief?
Oh, well, I'm definitely all about school choice. That's one of my educational plans. I believe that especially these kids in these inner cities, I coach football down in the inner city, and so I see these schools firsthand. I am wholeheartedly 100% for school choice, and that's why the Democrats vote against school choice. And so if parents really want school choice, they need to vote in representatives that actually want school choice as well, because that's the Democrat plan. They don't want these kids to be able to escape from the plight that they're in. They don't want them to be able to get this good education or better education, because they need them down in the city. They need them. I wouldn't say dumb, but they need them undereducated. And that's what's happening down in these schools. So that's why the Democrats will always vote against school choice. And so and as far as the bill for, I can definitely go for the bill for conservative blacks, you know, Asiatics, because, you know, we definitely get the brunt of it from both sides, I'd say. You know, and if Asians and these other nationalities can have a hate crime bill, yeah, I think black conservatives should be able to have a hate crime bill made too.
I've got an option for you. I want to talk about that, but the school choice, the whole idea. When I talk about, you know, racism in the inner cities, to me, one of the greatest racism, you know, things going on today is Democrat Party leadership, who are creating, you know, dependent black Americans with substandard schools, substandard public housing, and an ideology that, you know, the whole critical race theory in the schools, the whole idea. Can't succeed if you're black in this country, and if you're white, you're the enemy, you know, and this affects everybody, you know, and this kind of stuff has to stop. When I talk about school choice, I want to end the government education system, because I do not believe you can reform them. I do not believe you can school choice your way out of this. As long as you let a government education system exist, you're going to have indoctrination. You're going to have the marks on school boards. You're going to have the teachers that believe in, you know, in leftist supremacy that they're indoctrinating their kids with. So when the schools closed, when they actually did close back during COVID, the first thing I said was, great, leave them closed, sell the buildings, fire the teachers, get rid of the unions. This is the perfect opportunity while they're closed to set up an entire national private education system with real vouchers that go to everybody, including people that don't have school kids, so they can actually contribute to the schools that they choose to go to. They choose to contribute to, even though they don't have kids, because that's full representation. But how far are you willing to go with the government school system to either reform it or abolish it? There's a big question for you.
I mean, well, you know, I think last time I was on your show, I told you that I would definitely be in favor and would be sponsoring a bill to abolish the federal Department of Education, because it's been a total failure, and put it back down with the states. And I think at the state level, each state should be able to determine for themselves what their kids need. You know, and I do believe that there are vouchers, and I do believe in the private school and the charter school system. If the public school system, because everyone can't afford, unfortunately, everyone can't afford private school. Now with the vouchers, they may be able to, but I definitely believe in charter schools, as many charter schools as possible, and also trade schools. You know, what I would like to see is the trades enter back into these buildings, and that's every building, not just one building where, you know, kids can be bused to, you know, for a couple of hours a day. I think all trade skills should be able to be in each building, so these kids can smell it, they can see it, they can touch it, they can feel it, and then they can be right there, and they can go into these classes. And, you know, they should be able to trade a plumbing class for a math class. If they're not going into science, and if they're not going into something like a doctor like my son is, and if they're not good at math, why force them to do math if they're not going to use algebra ever in their life? You know, they may be a brick mason, they can be carpenters, they can be taught to work with their hands. And so I believe that these vouchers can also be used in that area of education as well, because if you teach a kid or a man three trades, they never have to rely on the federal government or the state government or any welfare programs to take care of them, because they can make their own living. They can go, and that's anywhere in this nation, anywhere in this world, they can go and live. That's why these illegals can come from you know, Guatemalan come to the United States and do well because they have skilled trades, okay? So we need to bring back the skilled trades here in the United States for our kids, and we can start that in middle school. We spend a billions of dollars on the education system that has failed. Why not spend billions of dollars on educational programs that work and the trade skills will work, and that can be valued in every school.
Yeah, see, I would go a little further. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I would go a little further and not have any direct funding of any school. I think all the money should go to parents and to citizens, and they would take their voucher, you know, and contribute that to the school of their choice. That way you wouldn't have to have the government deciding, you know, how many people would be trade schools, how many schools you want for this, how many schools you want for that. Because if it's a total voucher system, and you also combine in tax credits and tax deductions, and you can even income, you know, sort of, you know, work with that. But the thing is, if the lowest income person, you know, lowest income parents in this country should have the same ability to go to a private school that the richest person does. You know, there's your equal education. So if you're on a full voucher system, you know, there is no going to the public schools. All the money goes to the vouchers, and the people with the vouchers, they decide how to spend it best. You can do the same thing with healthcare. You can have a total healthcare voucher system, and people are going to get prices, and they get medical savings accounts, and they can judge where to spend their health dollars because everybody's getting the voucher, especially if you make healthcare costs, you know, a tax credit. So you can do that with both health and education. You can have a total voucher system, a total privatized system, and that way the market, the individuals will decide. And the greater good, I hate that term, will be decided by the individual decisions.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree 100% that the money should follow the child, 100%.
Okay.
I agree totally.
Okay.
Can I say,
Josie? Yeah, that's good, Josie. Yeah.
Our government doesn't want for young people to learn a skill at all. When I first arrived to America, the first thing they put me was one of the classes to learn how to cook, how to sew, home economic class, and I can sew a patch within 2 minutes and charge $5 to a lot of these people that come walking in my store. You know,
wow.
1, 2, 3. They don't know how to do that. They don't know how to hem a pair of pants. They go to Joann's Fabric and they buy the sticky tape and they iron it, but then the stuff comes off. The young kids nowadays, they don't know how to do nothing because we're not teaching them. And the government doesn't want for you to learn skills. Put a child for a 1 year learning a skill to be a plumber, make a lot of money. They want them to go to college. And a lot of people that I have hired in the past, this music teacher with degrees and everything, she couldn't find a job. This other girl just graduated there. She was working for me for 4 years. Guess what she's doing? She's delivering food with a college degree. So, and a lot of the young people that I have known, they said, well, I don't want to get in the military. I'm going to do college. And then they fail. And now one of them, he's a druggie. With all the druggy kids.
Just they need to shorten your up.
You know what I mean?
Chief Bell's going to have to leave
here
in just a minute
or
two.
What the government is doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, quick question. Should basic skills be included in education? I mean, that's what parents used to teach. But, Chief, I'll do that. And then,
yeah, that should start early. Can I say something else?
I mean,
yeah, quickly. I don't know how much time Chief Bell has. We'll find out real quickly, though.
You
yeah,
know,
ahead,
another thing,
here.
Too, the Democrats and their attack on energy, especially like oil, that there is just ridiculous. Why would you do away with the oil industry when you have an abundance that God has given this country? And also, look at all the people that would affect, even retirees. If there's going to be alternative fuels, then let them come on and make their own way into the industry. Don't do away with certain industries. And, you know, here's another thing, too. You got a lot of black young people who have went to school, who have majored in STEM fields, that's working for these energy companies, that's working for the defense companies. Now, what are you going to do with them?
Chief, in the minute you have left, or I don't know how much time you have left, you can stay the hour. It's great, but
I got about 3 minutes left. I mean, I agree with that. You know, I mean, but it's all about money. You have to look at who's running the country, because you see the way that Donald Trump did it. He was bringing the money back into the United States because he was an America First president. He understood that everything is America First. So, but you have people like Brandon. Okay, that's in the White House now, and you got these people that's in charge of these companies. They make more money exporting, you know, or giving these other countries because they're beholden to these other countries. They're compromised by these other countries, and they make more money that way. So it's really all you got to do is follow the money to get your answers to those questions of why.
Yeah. This is, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You're welcome anytime. So especially as the election gets closer. So you can come on every week if you want. It's great talking to you. But if you've got two or 3 minutes left. Well, thank you.
I want to
turn this over to you now for anything we should have covered, we didn't, issues that are particularly of concern to you. So, I'll let you expand on where you want to go from here.
Hey, well, I just want America to be safe right now. Really, the major concern right now is the election fraud. We have to find out what happened in 2020 before we can move forward to 2022 and 2024, because if we don't find out if we use these same machines, the elections are going to be stolen again, okay?
Yeah.
Or there'll be a lot of fraud. And we're finding out, in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, in Michigan, in Georgia, all of these elections had major fraud in them, every single one. And the people need to step up and want to, even the Democrat that voted for Biden or whoever, they should want to step up and say, okay, well, this is what makes this country great. We have to have free and fair elections here in the United States for this country to prosper, or we just become another third world country. And so even if they believe that Brandon won, as you call him, then they should want all 50 states to be audited as well, because that's going to save America. Without that happening, America is going to go down, especially with these Democrats that want to pass these bills, these HR1s, and like say everybody can vote. They want to turn this into a democracy. We are not a democracy. The United States, and they keep using this term. And every time I hear these people use these terms, democracy, but it's always – democracy is a Marxist term. And it's rooted with Marxism and Karl Marx. We are a constitutional republic, and it was made that way so we have – representation, and we can remove that representation if that representation is not representing us in a proper way. With democracy, you have no representation. It's just 100% vote. Everybody votes. So it's the majority, you know, whatever the majority says, the rules. So, and that's what the Democrat Party is trying to do. They're trying to bring in this major majority so they can turn over the United States to a democracy where everybody votes and we get away from the constitutional republic. So, that's one of the things that I'm going to keep fighting on. I'm going to keep fighting for election integrity. I'm going to keep fighting for the security of our borders. And I'm going to keep fighting on saving these kids, because these kids are the ones that need to be saved. These kids are being indoctrinated on this transgenderism and these agendas that they're trying to push forward to separate and destroy the nuclear family. And they're using gender to separate and destroy the nuclear family. And without the nuclear family, is going to continue to deteriorate. So I'm fighting on that as well.
No, I mean, like I say, I agree with you completely. I just, you know me, I want to nudge you further. You know, it's not a whole lot, you know, of distance to go, but it's really great to have you on, sir. I really appreciate it. I'll leave you with one of my favorite sections of the Constitution, the fact that you're focusing on the fact that we are a constitutional republic, you know, which is as opposed to a democracy, which is the difference between, you know, a trial by jury with rules of evidence and a lynch mob. You know, it's such a difference. But a little bit of background noise from somebody, so we want to kind of watch that real quick if we can.
I'm sorry, I'm walking.
Oh, that's okay, no problem. Yeah, it happens. Believe me, I've heard dogs bark and canaries sing, you know, during my show. It's okay. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution may be of extreme use to you at this point in your campaign. It says, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. None of those are being done. Just the opposite, in fact, by the Brandon insurrection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There you go. Anything else you want to add? I got time.
I know, because I don't want the background noise because I have to get to this appointment. But yeah, definitely.
Okay.
On what you read, right there, what you read is enough to impeach Brandon on. And you know, I think that hopefully once we get in office, hopefully people like me can get in office in 2022, and then we can go ahead and impeach Brandon out of there, because he's in violation of his oath. He's in violation of the Constitution with the article that you just read right there.
Okay, get onto YouTube, you know, and then let's hear you speak. Let's watch it. Let's share it. This could be good. Article 4, Section 4. It's there to be used. That's why it was written. All right, sir. Thank you very much. Let me let you get you to your appointment.
God bless you.
And thank you. And come on back. Come on back soon. This is I love our discussion. I really do. All right, I got to play something now.
Yeah, hey, God bless y'all too. I'll definitely be back. And thank you for having me again.
Well, thank you too. There we go. All right, I got to work on my goodbyes. I keep cutting my guests off from thanking us back. I get so high.
What was your name again?
That's Chief Jerome Bell. J A R O M E B E L L. He's on my Facebook page. I put his website on the Action Radio group page, and he's been on before. And he's a great guest and a great congressional candidate from Virginia. And so I was running up there. So I was hoping Jonathan would call in. I'll get those guys connected pretty soon. All right, let's switch to.
I got to go too. Bye. God bless you.
Okay. Bye, Josie. God bless you
bye.
Too.
Bye, Josie.
You're still here? It's like one big family here. All right, let me play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, and I'll have a couple of minutes with Pianki when I come back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state. But they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptists that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state as in government in general, but the individual states, established their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so. We had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptist wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptist, believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state. Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'll get there. Bianchi, we got about 3 minutes and 30 seconds, so I'm going to turn it over to you, sir. Your observations so far, anything on your mind in the last little bit today? This has been a great day. I've been going crazy. I love it. I could do another hour, not even think about it. Yeah. Sir?
Well, I like what the truckers are doing in Ottawa, although I don't know very much about their government in Canada. I think I would like to see. Now, someone said that there was the same type of movement here in the States. Were there? Was there?
It's in March. From what I've heard, and I'm going to check with my friends at Northern Florida Truckers, Bikers for Trump, when that's going to happen, because I think the bikers and the truckers are going to do it together. At least it'll be warmer. I mean, in March, Washington in March is a lot nicer than Ottawa in January. I'm here to tell you right now. I remember my Canadian winters when I was a kid. This is the reason I don't live in Canada. It's freaking cold. Vancouver is about the only place I think I could stand. But yeah, but what's fascinating, now Canada's a parliamentary system. So any of the British Commonwealth countries that still have, you know, some connection. I mean, the Queen is still the sovereign over Canada, although it's much more of a figurehead than anything else. But the Queen's still there. It's on the books. It's still in the Constitution. You know, the Queen, you know, still has reigning powers, although extremely limited, if any, at this point, over Canada. So British Commonwealth, that'd be Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Bermuda. Oh, I think Bermuda's independent now. But and then you got former colonies like Belize, where Alan's from. That was British Honduras. But the Commonwealth countries, you know, they have a parliamentary system. And so they take a minister, which would be like a senator. They take a minister, and then they make them the prime
minister. In other words, the first minister. And that's an elected position, and it's really fluid. I mean, they come and go. They call. You can have a vote of no confidence. You can kick them out all the time. But they vote like we do. They vote for the members of parliament. The members of parliament elect from the minister. They elect the prime minister. I don't know if it's House of Lords, House of Commons, or joint. That's part of the fun of this is to be able to learn about these different government systems. And we're going to hear the same thing in Australia. We're going to figure out what's going on there. But it's a different system because it's, you know, based on British Commonwealth, based on a monarchy.
Well, yeah, and also I like what Mr. James Jerome Bell said. There needs to be more black candidates for conservative causes that need to speak out. Mm-hmm. And if we ever was able to get some of the things we're talking about, like especially school choice, where you would educate more African-Americans, the young people, mm-hmm. and where they can be able to have access to high-paying wage and salary jobs, then they will move away from that socialism, which is so highly proposed by the Democratic Party.
Well, you can get in touch with him. I mean, I'm sure you can reach him at his website, and you'd be able to talk about ideas and things like that. I like a full voucher system, no government education whatsoever, unless people, that's what they want to put their money into, but that's all right. But the only thing I forgot to mention, and this is for you and Chief Bell, is if you make ideology a protected right or a protected class under the Civil Rights Act, and I've thought of doing that, that would cover conservatives, black conservatives, Asian folks. It would cover everybody from whatever political persuasion you were that's different than the Marxist left, you know. And so if you make ideology, I would also put gun owners as a protected class in the Civil Rights Act. So the groups that are being victimized, you know, and then you remove racial classifications from government. So there are ways to do this. But if you're interested in working on that with me, in fact, I think I have a bill in process on additions to the Civil Rights Act that would include ideology and would include gun owners. We're off the air. Well, we're done. But just let me get your 20 seconds worth, and then I'm going to have to pick it up again tomorrow. What do you think?
Well, I agree. So I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, that's good. Thanks, Bianchi. What a great show today. This is way too much fun. All right, Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our website that changes everything is writeyourlaws.com. That is where you can write a bill, and it just might end up on the president, the real president when we get one, the president's desk. And that's at WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. And, of course, you want to contribute to Action Radio. That's paypal.me/actionradio, although I think I'm going to get the Christian Source, the alternative, to GoFundMe. We'll talk to them about that. Email me, greg@writeyourlaws.com, and I will see you tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. And the rest of the world, you guys will figure it out.